This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared. And remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enterfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enterfood.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humla Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humla Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humla Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook. BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hello and welcome to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. I'm your host, Colorado Ron, and I'm here with Bubba Da Vinci. How you doing, Bubba?
Yo. Doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. So we got a crazy show today. In our first hour is brought to you by Humless. Now, Humless is a pretty sweet product. If you guys haven't checked out Humless, do yourself a favor, check it out. We got they do a sweet power backup system. I've used it. Actually, our Backwoods Home Magazine just did an article on that. Do you remember that, Bubba? They just did an article where it saved their chops while they were trying to get ready for a print, and their power went out, and they used the Humless as a backup system, plugged in their computers, got it all going, and were able to continue on with their work. Is that right?
That's right. Now, you know, we talked to Jeff Yago a couple of weeks ago, and he's a big advocate of all things solar, and I'm sure he'd have great things to say about this product too. We never got a chance to check it out and see if he had it in his store, but you know, everything that we've done with the guys at Humless has been fantastic. I know I have one at my house. I know you have one.
Absolutely.
And we ran a couple tests with it and everything else. And I think I actually think I'm going to have to get another one just so I have some battery backup so I can make sure we're doing our radio show. But because Lord knows when the power goes out, the internet doesn't go out either. So, I mean, it's good to have one for, you know, for those reasons. So thanks, Humless, for supporting the program and supporting Self-Reliance Expo. And I populated it up on our Facebook page and our thing, so check them out. If you need a backup generator, Humless is the one to look at. It's a silent, portable power source.
Yeah, awesome. I love them. So, okay, we've got a pretty cool lineup this hour. Our first guest will be coming up here shortly, but that's with the Appleseed Project. I love Appleseed. You like Appleseed too, don't you? We've had them at just about every expo now.
Yeah, actually, I believe we have. We started with them last year, and it was kind of we were trying to figure out some activities to do that were a little bit more interactive, and we met Kim and Jim Heath, who are the coordinators for Colorado, and these guys really stepped up. And I mean really stepped up. Not only did they participate in Colorado, but then they said, we'll come to Utah. And then they came to Texas, and now they're coming back to Colorado. These guys are awesome.
So cool. Well, yeah, we'll be talking with them shortly. First though, we got to talk about is our wild and crazy trip out to the East Coast. That was a long haul, man.
Yeah. We kind of talked about it last week, and there was a whole bunch of crazy things going on. But the purpose of it was, I mean, besides running into people and meeting people and kind of seeing what was going on, was to lock down the dates for another one of our expos. And I think we're set, and I think you can pretty much announce it now, can't you, Colorado?
I believe so. We've got, let's see here. Well, let me make sure, because she just sent me an email and I think it's good to go. It's going to be September 14th and 15th.
Where is it at?
It's going to be at the, it's called the Hickory Metro Convention Center in Hickory, North Carolina. So it's just outside of Asheville.
Yeah. And we're really looking forward to it, because we went to Asheville and met up with a couple of our co-hosts, or our the hosts on our station. We met with Vicky
Donna
Lynn
Miller. Yep.
And Donna Miller. And both outstanding hosts and wonderful people. And they actually steered us the right direction. They said, hey, let's check out Asheville, and we did. And then right after Asheville, when we couldn't lock down the dates there, they said, you got to do it in this area. You got to do one on the East Coast. And we said, okay, well, let's look at it. Threw us the name for Hickory, North Carolina, which is right down the hill. And, man, bam, we're there. So, So now we have May 18th, 19th, Colorado Springs, September 14th, 15th in Hickory, North Carolina, and then October 26th and 27th in Mesa, Arizona. But, I've been emailing all night and all morning, Colorado, because we actually added another show. So we're gonna add five shows this year, and we're gonna tease this. But I couldn't get written permission from these people to let all the cat out of the bag. And I've been sitting here with both my internet and my cell phone on since 6 o'clock in the morning, waiting for one of them to text me and say, go ahead and give all the details. So maybe by the end of the show we can give all the details, but we've added a show on July 27th and 28th in Dallas, Texas. Everybody's going, hey, weren't you guys just there? And it was a good show for us, and we love the people of Texas, because I'm from Texas. My girls are from Texas. So Texas is a good place. Actually, Colorado Ron from Texas. So
that's right.
Texas is a good place. And what we're going to do is we're going to be going back to Texas. Now, there's a reason why we're going back to Texas, which we can't relay to everybody right this moment. But hopefully by the end of the show, I'll have a documented email that states that I can do it so I don't get in trouble.
It was by special invite.
I would say that's probably fair. Special invite was a good way to do it. So, but besides that, I was actually going to get up this morning and do biscuits and chocolate gravy. But I'll have to admit, I got up this morning, and we're working diligently to get a bunch of things going with the show, and I never got to it. And so, yeah, kids are out there kind of pouting.
Yeah, you know what? I was actually thinking about doing that this morning as well. That you know, I've got a recipe I pulled up here, and you know, the only thing I'm nervous about with trying it is, do you have any idea how bad we felt the rest of the day?
I know.
We ate so much stuff. We were just so sick.
Okay, guys, this is not a joke. I mean, in any stretch of the imagination. We ate so much food. I mean, I think we told everybody. What's the name of that show that you like?
Oh, Man vs. Food.
No,
and,
that's
yeah. Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
we followed the Diners, Drive-In, and Dive, meal strategy, you know, where we stopped and ate crap the entire way. I hope I can say crap on the radio. And, good crap. I mean, the food was fantastic, but, you know, it probably wasn't very good for us. And although we just slammed food the entire drive, and I'll be honest, my wife joked around and said that was really the purpose for the drive, not finding an event, you know, venue. we did it just so we could eat. Colorado Ron and I ate so much of the food at that last stop where we got introduced to chocolate gravy that when we both climbed into the car, Colorado Ron had to lean back his chair just to be able to do it. And I had to sit at kind of like 45-degree angle while I was driving. I mean, it looked like those, you know, like in those old lowrider movies of the 70s and 80s where they kind of slint down and hang to the side and kind of lean against the door while they're driving with one hand. That was me. But it was only because that was the only place that the pressure of my overly filled stomach didn't kill me.
And every bump, oh my gosh, oh, we were dying. We were completely dying. I laid back and I was out and I slept for, I don't know, a good hour. And even when I woke up, I thought, okay, so if I can go to sleep and sleep a little bit, then maybe I'll feel a little bit better when I wake up and I won't feel so full. And that was not the case. We were full all stinking day. And I was so sad because we actually stopped, and I had planned this. It was my secret plan, but Bubba didn't realize this. But I planned to stop in Memphis at lunchtime because that's home of the blues, and you got to find some good barbecue in Memphis. But we were so stopped, we couldn't eat. I had no desire, even though it smelled so good. I had no desire to eat. It was it was terrible.
And by the time we left Memphis, he was singing the blues because he didn't get his lunch.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So although I would call the trip a success, we locked the venue September 14th and 15th in Hickory, North Carolina, and although we ate our way through 7 states, you know. At the end of it, we were singing the blues because we didn't get any Memphis barbecue. So, oh, well.
Oh, well. Nice. Sorry, Memphis. Next time.
Next trip. just to make sure we are going to be also talking to Patrice Lewis during the second hour, getting an update from her. And then we will be touching back with Mad Mike for a little bit. I think last show we cut it. You know, we got down to where he was telling us the things that we need to get to prepare for the for any situation when it goes nuclear. You know, and we found out that groundwater and a bunch of different situations here in the United States could cause problems, especially with solar flares, which we'll cover also. And so he'll be on for like the last 10 minutes of the last half hour, 45 minutes, kind of throwing those things in. So, you know, we appreciate Mad Mike coming back again. To finish that up for us. So I hear that Jim Heath is on, so we should get ready to go to break and then come back and talk about the Appleseed Project. How's that sound for you?
Oh, man, I'm down. I love that. I love those guys. Let's do it.
Yeah, all right. So, all right, guys, we will be back in 2 minutes. We're going to take a commercial break, and we will be back with Jim Heath from Appleseed. Talk to you in a few.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standard for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year plus meat eaters units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwood Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. We're here with you live every Saturday, 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we will be talking now with Jim Heath from Project Appleseed. So how are you doing this morning, Jim?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking.
So, man, we were talking about this morning. Yeah, we can't believe how long you've been with us. It just seems like, you know, just yesterday that you were attending our events, and it was actually middle of last year that you attended our first event.
Yeah, and we've had a great time with it. It's worked real well for us. Hopefully it's worked well with you also.
No, it's been fantastic. Go ahead, Ron. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I just wanted to point out, just for the record, you know, both Bubba and I did lay down some lead down on some targets. Was it the first event that he was at? Was that in Utah? I think that was in Utah. That was the second event.
That was our second event. It was Utah.
Yeah, it was the second event.
Okay. And if I remember right, I believe my wife outshot you, Bubba.
I think it was your wife and Laura Baker, our marketing person, and who had never touched a gun before in her life. After a little bit of training from Jim and his wonderful wife, Kim, laid down next to me. And guys, I'm an ex-military soldier, eight years, you know, of supposed training. And this tells you what the military trains you. Expert shooter, according to the little bolo badge that I used to put on my chest. And here's this young girl, 25 years old, never touched a gun before, and outshot me at the range, and also Colorado Run. And if Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a 5 or 6 year old little boy. I don't remember if it was Ron's or no. You know something? It was Sharon Peterson's little boy, who had never shot before, outshot me too.
Yep, and I'll tell you why that was. I'll pick on you a little bit. It's because
Please.
They listened. They knew they had something to learn.
that would be accurate because Kim and Jim both kept offering, you know, why don't you kind of come over here for a few minutes and we'll put you down here and we'll give you some instruction. I'm like, I've been shooting for years. I hunt every year. Yeah, 8 years in the military, blah, blah, blah. I should be able to shoot at the end of the day. And boy, when you get your butt whipped by a 25-year-old girl that had never touched a gun and a 7-year-old little boy, I guess I need to start taking some lessons. Yeah.
It doesn't get, sorry, Bubba, but it doesn't get much worse.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. No, it was fun, though. We had a great time. I love when they come down and they set up that range. My kids love it every time, you know, every time the expo's getting near, they're like, oh, is Appleseed going to be there? Appleseed going to be there? So I want you to know that my kids look forward to that as well as other kids, because I've actually had, you know, some of our neighbors that go to the expo here in Colorado, and they have also mentioned how much they love it.
Yeah, at the expos, we see your kids more than you do, I think, Ron. They seem to hang out there a lot.
Yeah, and sorry about that.
That's all right. They're great kids.
Well, hopefully they'll be expert shots by the time it's all said and done. But I do have a question for you. And this comes up a lot, and so that's the reason why I got to ask it. What is Appleseed? What is Appleseed, and why is it called Appleseed?
So first off, Appleseed is a fundamental rifle marksmanship instruction program. What we do is, over the course of a weekend, we'll show you what it takes to be safe with a rifle, to know how to use all the components of a rifle. But that's just the start of it. Most of what we do over the weekend is show you how to shoot. How do you look through the sights? There's a particular way that you need to do that in order to shoot accurately. How do you pull a trigger? How do you even breathe? We talk about a lot about how do you breathe when you're shooting. Different positions will shoot a standing, some sort of kneeling or sitting position, and standing, prone position also, if I didn't say that. And we'll go through that. It's essentially what the military taught at the beginning of World War II. It's not exactly, but it's pretty close to that. So it's very good rifle marksmanship. There's just the fundamentals of it. We don't teach self-defense. We don't teach close quarter battle or any of those things. We don't teach, you know, all it is fundamental rifle marksmanship. But if you know the fundamentals, if they're really fundamentals, you should be able to shoot any type of firearm in any situation better than you did before you came to an Appleseed. That's roughly what we are. That's the first part. The second part, though, is we're really a political organization, but nonpartisan. And what I mean by that is we want to change the direction the country's going, but we are not saying what that direction is. It's up to every individual to decide what that direction might be. But I think everyone would agree that the country could be going in a better direction. And so we talk politics. But the only politics we talk are April 19th, 1775, which was the first day of our country, and what happened and why certain events took place and how that affects us now. And so that's the real part of Appleseed, is we are looking to make a change in this country. Where the name came from, and I make this up because I really don't know, is that, actually, I think I read it somewhere, is that Johnny Appleseed was a missionary going around spreading the gospel. He, along his way, he was planting trees, apple seeds, and he didn't know whether they would grow or not. He just went out and spread the word and planted seeds. What we're trying to do in Appleseed, the way I would put it, is we're trying to re-spread the seeds of liberty, so that people who come to the Appleseed will think, you know, this country is unique. There's never been a country like this in the world, and there will never be another country like this in the world. And maybe it's worth saving. Maybe it's worth doing something to make it as good as it can be rather than the road it seems to be on. And so what we're doing is spreading seeds of liberty.
Nice.
Now, how is Appleseed, when was Appleseed formed? Because, I mean, it's actually part of a larger organization, right? It's part of the RWVA. Is that right?
Well, sort of. Appleseed is the only thing that the RWVA, Revolutionary War Veterans Association, if you want to know what that means, is the corporation that runs Appleseed. And so RWVA, the only thing that they do is Appleseed. I don't know if that answered it.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, but how long have you guys been an organization? I know that when I was in Texas, it seemed like about 2 years ago when I started seeing billboards pop up and things like that. But you guys have been around a little bit longer than that, right?
Yeah, we started, I think, in 2006. Part of the reason I'm not quite sure is because it started as just a couple of guys thinking maybe this will work, maybe it won't. And they did a few things before they were incorporated and tried a couple, roughly what we're doing now, but kind of tweaked it around a little bit. And so we've been about that long, about since 2006. It started by a fellow named Fred, whose real name is John, but he goes by Jack. And he takes out the ad. Yeah, pretty curious, huh? He takes out the back page ad on Shotgun News, and he's been doing it for many, many, many years. And he was used to be of the opinion that, you know, we were going to be fighting in the streets. For whatever reason, the UN's coming. He was really doom and gloom. And about, I don't know how long ago, 6, 7, 8 years ago, he started having a change of heart that if we ever got to the point where the country was so bad that there was fighting in the streets, we've already lost the country. And there's no good in that. There's no way that could be better than even what we have now. And so he thought, got together with some friends and said, what can I do so we don't get to that point where we have to have some sort of armed confrontation or rioting or whatever the scenario would be. And so he and a couple other guys came up with the idea of Appleseed, that if we can make a change in the country now and get more people involved in our government, because it should be a representative government, and if we can get the government to represent us again, then we've saved the country without firing a shot, which is far, far more preferable to having the country become worse than it is now. So that's kind of how it started.
Nice.
Very cool.
Now you guys are in several states, not just Colorado. I mean, obviously, I'm familiar with Colorado because you're here. You're based out of here, but you're in several other states besides Colorado. Is that correct?
We are in every state of the country. So every state this year will have a shoot, and most of them will have multiple shoots up to. Let's see, in Colorado, I think this year we're 25 or 28 that we have scheduled so far, and we probably will add more to that schedule. Let's see, we just did a shoot in Arkansas. Kim and I went down there to run a shoot, and they will have, I think, 3 shoots this year. And California, they've got maybe 60 shoots. So depending on the state, you may have lots of choices or you may have 1 or 2, but every state will have a shoot this year.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Hawaii, yeah.
Is there one in Hawaii?
There's one in Hawaii. That's right, there is. Some in Alaska this year. So we're spreading out. I said every state, didn't I? Hawaii is a state.
Yeah, girl. Some people don't really consider Hawaii a state. It's more of a state of mind.
That could be.
Yeah. I actually just looked up Iowa. I'm surprised. We have quite a few. Maybe I can get you and Kim to come down to one of these ones in Iowa and visit.
We would love to do that.
That would be great. There's like several right near me.
Mm-hmm.
So
you better show up, though.
You know something? I need to, because I can't go to the next show and be embarrassed like that. Actually, I was just looking. There's actually one event close to me prior to the May event, and I might need you all to come down to that one just so I don't get embarrassed when I show up in May. And have to reshoot against Ron's wife and Laura again. So,
yeah, Ron's wife listens also. So
yeah, that's right. Winterset, Iowa, 28th and 29th of April. Mark it on your calendar. Teach Scott how to shoot.
Well, we'll have to talk about that.
Okay, so I have to ask a favor. You know,
sure.
Since I have you on here before we get into too much more. You know, I kind of like to consider myself a man's man, but, you know, it's everybody gets a little emotional. And the first time I met Jim was standing there with his wife, and he was saying, we tell these wonderful stories at the events to kind of prove that people have laid down their lives for the rights that we have in our Constitution and, you know, the rights to bear arms and everything else. And the first thing is, and a story like, and he tells a story. And I'm like, okay, you know, and we get vendors that come up to us all the time with stories and things like that. I swear, within 3 minutes, I had tears running down my face and kind of going, God, this is really good. And would you do us and our audience a favor and kind of throw out one of those stories? I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, of, you know, someone that no one's ever heard of and one of the things they've done so people have these rights in these countries.
Okay. Let's see. You want kind of a let's see. I've got two to do. Let me do the one I told you, I believe. Fellow named Isaac Davis.
That's the one. Yep.
Is that it? Okay.
That's the one.
So on April 19, 1775, Paul Revere, who we've all heard of, went out and told the countryside that the regulars were out. He didn't say the British are coming because they were all British, but he said the regulars are out. Well, one of the towns that got the message was the town of Acton. They had a fellow who was head of their militia whose name was Isaac Davis. He was a gunsmith and a blacksmith and a farmer, because everybody did lots of things those back then to stay alive, to earn a living. And he was a captain in the militia, and he was in charge of training his troops. And so behind his blacksmith shop, he set up a range, and his troops would practice twice a week marksmanship. Also, because he was a blacksmith, he was able to make bayonets for their muskets. No one else in the militia happened to have bayonets at that time. His militia was unique. Also, they had cartridge boxes, which allowed them to fire at the rapid rate of about 4 shots a minute, which was far better than what most other folks could do. And so they would practice. They were well-trained. They were a regulated militia. So come April 19, 1775, he got the word, and he brought his men down to what was the North Bridge in Concord. The British had set up on one side of the bridge. The militia had set up on the other side of the bridge, and they were just kind of waiting around and seeing what was going on. Well, I don't want to go too long on the story, but anyway, the militia felt that they needed to go back towards Concord because they were on the far side of Concord. So they started, the colonel in charge of the militias asked the Isaac Davis and said, would you lead us back to Concord? And Isaac Davis made the statement. He said, I've not a man who's afraid to go. And he got his men in front of the group and headed towards the regulars who were guarding the other side of the bridge. Well, let me back up. In the morning, long before daylight, and they got the alarm in Acton, where Isaac Davis was, the men of his militia were gathering in Isaac Davis's kitchen and preparing their cartridges, making sure they were ready to go, just talking, trying to figure out what was going on, because nobody really had any good idea of what was happening at that time. Whether regulars were really coming, whether, you know, what their intent was, those kind of things. And he had 4 kids who were, depending on the version of the story, either 2 or 4 of them. Most of the time people say all four of his kids were sick with a disease that was typically fatal. And so he was leaving his kids sick at home, and possibly they were going to die. As he starts heading out the door, he stops and turns to his wife and looks at her. And later on, she said, it looked like he was going to say something, and he kind of turned and stopped, and all he said was, take good care of the children, and he marched off. Well, so now back at the North Bridge, Isaac Davis is heading down to face the regulars, and when he starts getting closer, for some reason, probably to scare off the militia, one of the regulars fired a shot without order. And so since one shot was fired, a few more regulars fired a shot. And when that happened, then the regulars fired a volley, Well, one of the first shots hits Isaac Davis in the chest, hits him in the heart, and he dies instantly, splattering blood all over the men around him. Another fellow was shot in the head and also died. Colonel Buttrick said, "Fire, for God's sakes, fire as fast as you can," to his militia. And that was the first time that the colonists had fired on the regulars. One of the things that is very important about that is up until that time, they were all British citizens. They were not looking for a war. They were not looking for a fight. But as soon as they leveled a rifle on the regulars, the militia, those men became traitors of the country, traitors to England, and could be hung on sight by any British officer. And so they were paying a dear price, not just in Isaac Davis' case. He died before he could even fire a shot. Everyone there knew that their lives were changing forever, and they were willing to make that sacrifice for us. And so one of the things about Isaac Davis is, even though he never fired a shot, and he was not, all he did was march toward the British. He was not in any battle at all until he died, because he was died with one of the first shots. But he made quite a difference that day and in the course of the country, because he had prepared his men. He had done training. He had provided equipment. And so even though he didn't participate in the war, he was crucial to that day's events. And so, as we would say at Appleseed, he was a dangerous old man. So that's Isaac Davis.
Yeah, it's amazing how you know, people forget that it's just the everyday person who sometimes makes the biggest difference and you know, can change things, can change how history is.
Absolutely. The stories we tell about the events at an Appleseed, we tell about the events on the first day of our country and the whys of what was going on. But also we tell a lot of stories that we call dangerous old men and women, of people who didn't have to do anything. Isaac Davis, he lived in Acton. The British troops were going to Concord. He didn't have to go. His town was not under any threat. His family, the family lived in the same town, so you'd have most of the town would be one or two families. Well, he didn't have family in Concord that anyone knows of, so he wasn't protecting his family. He probably had friends. He probably knew those folks, so maybe he was going to go hang out with his friends. But he had absolutely no obligation to go towards Concord, where the regulars were coming. But the reason he did that was to protect the liberty of the colonists. His overriding thing, you know, he wasn't doing it for him. He knew that chances are his kids were not going to live out the year. So it wasn't for his kids, because they were sick and dying. It wasn't for his family. It wasn't for his neighbors. It was because of the overriding that, you know, if their thought was, we can either stand up and fight and take the chance of dying, or worse, being wounded, because being wounded was far worse than dying right off. They could either stand up and fight, or they could live as slaves under the king. And they chose to not live as slaves. They chose to live free, and in so doing was the start of our country. And we enjoy those freedoms that they fought for 37 years later now. So, those were the choices then. I'm sorry?
That's amazing. Well, obviously you have a passion for this because, you know, first of all, in order for somebody to travel as far as you do to help at the expo, or for that matter, you just went to Arkansas and did a shoot that had nothing to do with the expo. So, you travel outside of that, going to these shoots. I mean, in order to do that, you have to have a serious passion for what you're doing. I mean, how did you get into this to begin with?
Sure. I went to a gun club meeting. I belong to a club, and I'd never, other than to join, I'd never gone to a gun club meeting because, you know, it's a gun club meeting. And so I went, though, and someone stood up and said, you know, we're having an apple feed in a couple of weeks, and you might want to go to it. And I thought, I'd never heard of that. I wonder what that is. And then a young man stood up and said, yeah, he went to one, and his marksmanship really, really improved. He learned so much about marksmanship. And so I checked into it after the meeting. I looked on their webpage and saw, well, they seem to do a seem to think they know what they're doing about marksmanship, but they've got this history component. And history sucks. It you know, it in college, the only thing I got nothing out of history. You know, it took everything I had in me to be able to pass the classes, stay awake in them. And so I thought to myself, well, you know, I slept through history in college. I ought to be able to do that for, you know, a weekend between the shooting. And so my wife and my son, who I think was 16 at the time, maybe 17, went to the Appleseed. It happened to be snowing in Colorado at our house. And if it was like most of the folks we know, it's like, oh, they're going to cancel this. You know, we set this whole weekend aside. We got ready for it. We got all the stuff that they said on the website we should have. And now they're going to cancel. And we thought, well, we'll drive out there anyway, and we'll just, you know, shoot on our own. Well, when we got there, there were about 20 people standing around in the snow. And we looked at each other, my wife and I, and said, you know, this might be our group of people. So we spent the day shooting and learning marksmanship. I'd done quite a bit of shooting. I'd done NRA small bore shooting in high school and a little bit in college. And what they taught was essentially what I knew, but I was rusty at it. And plus, they taught me some other stuff that I had never heard before. I was like, well, that makes sense. So it was great marksmanship training. But as we went home for the evening, Kim, my wife, and I were talking again. It's like, you know, that marksmanship was good, but the history was the best part. And it was a shock to us because it's history that told not when someone was born and when they died and what town they lived in necessarily, but it's what did they do, and more importantly, why did they do that? And how did that affect us, you know, things that are 230-some-odd years ago, how is that affecting us today? And that was kind of fascinating to us. And so I had done a lot of teaching in the past, and they said, well, if you shoot a rifleman score, you can become an instructor. And I didn't even know what a rifleman score was, but I thought, well, you know, I can do that. And so I did. And without knowing a lot about the organization, I became an instructor, and it turned out to be far better than what we thought it was. We had a fairly good understanding of what Appleseed was about after our first shoot, but just the organization, the people, it's a 100% volunteer organization, and it's probably the best run volunteer organization I've ever been associated with. It still has problems, and it's still a volunteer organization, but it's done really well. And the other thing is the folks that are involved in Appleseed are the best people we've met. Both the instructors and the students, they're people who get out and actually do things and are interested in making a difference in this country. And so that's why we stay with it. I went to the Appleseed, the first one, complaining about the country without any way to make a difference. All I did was see that the country was going not in a direction that I liked, and it was very frustrating to me, but I didn't do anything about it. At the Appleseed, it was like, you know, is this going to make a difference? I don't know, but at least we're trying to do something. We're trying to make a difference in this country. And because of the country that we live in, like I said, is unique in the world. I think it's the best country in the world, and we would like to maintain that. And so our passion is not only the country and trying to be part of saving that, but also the individuals. The people who come to shoot, almost every shoot, we have a story that will bring tears to our eyes of the people who have made a change in their lives just by coming to one shoot. It's kind of an interesting thing that happens, but it regularly happens that people's lives are changed at an Appleseed shoot.
So, Jim, let me ask you a question. You kind of mentioned something here a few minutes ago that when you were going to the thing, you brought everything that was needed. I just signed up for my shoot. Literally, while you were doing your speech, I was so moved. I signed up for my membership, and I actually signed up for that shoot in April. And what do you need to bring? I mean, most things provided? If I've never gone to a shoot before and I'm coming here to learn the basics and I don't even own a gun, which everybody, I do. Do you guys provide the things there? What are the basics that you need to bring to be prepared to go to a shoot?
All right. Well, when you sign up, you will get a confirmation email, and on that will be a link to a list of things you should bring to the shoot. The first thing on this list, and I'll rib you with this again, that you need to bring is a teachable attitude. You have to come wanting to learn something new and giving us a chance to show you different ways of doing stuff. If you come to a shoot not wanting to learn anything and you want to show us how well you shoot, there's a better use of your time than coming to one of our shoots. If you want to learn something, then there's probably not a better use of your time than coming to one of our shoots. So the first one on the list, and it shows up a couple times on that list, is a teachable attitude. Now, you're talking about equipment, so let's get to that. We ask that you bring your own rifle. We only shoot rifles. We don't shoot pistols. Anything that is safe and legal is adequate for you to bring to an Appleseed. Now, because we play a particular game, and we have our own particular rules, what works best is a semi-automatic detachable magazine rifle. And because we shoot upwards of, 350 to 500 shots, depending on the weekend, most people will shoot a .22, because if you're shooting center fire, for the price of ammunition, you could buy a .22 plus all the ammunition. And you don't get beat up with it. But we've had people, we had a fellow back in Arkansas, which I guess was last weekend, and he shot a M14 all weekend long, a 308, and he did fine. So that occurs, but most people will shoot a .22. It just doesn't beat you up as much, and like I say, it costs less. If you do not have a rifle, almost every shoot boss, the person who runs that shoot, will have a rifle available for you, but you need to let them know ahead of time. Have to give them, a couple weeks to be able to find one, because you might not be the only one who needs a rifle. So we ask if you need a rifle, that almost every shoot, it's not guaranteed, because it's 100% volunteer organization, all of the equipment is personal equipment of the instructors and the shoot boss. And so if it's a rifle that you borrow, it's one of the instructor's personal rifles that you're borrowing. But we're good with that. We want you to. We'd much rather have you shooting than not be there. And so we ask that you bring your own ammunition, because there's some different laws that govern what you can sell and what you can do with ammunition. We just stay away from that. And it's easier if you bring your own ammunition, because we don't want to put the whole bill for you. We want to make it doable, but we want you to have some skin in the game too. So you bring ammunition. If it's .22, it's $20 worth of ammunition typically. We require that you bring hearing protection and eye protection. Ideally, polycarbonate shooting glasses, but any eye protection, as long as reading glasses probably won't work, but plastic sunglasses or whatever, just something to protect your eyes. And then again, hearing protection, whether it's earplugs or over-the-ear protection. And again, most of the time, if you didn't have those, the shoot boss would be able to supply those for you. But those kind of things, if it's earplugs you're sticking in the ear, you probably want your own anyway, rather than ones that have been used three or four shoots. We wouldn't do that to you. We get no one. Then the next thing we have is a sling. We teach position shooting with a sling. Most people have, if they've ever used a sling on a rifle, it's to carry it through the woods. Well, proper use of a sling will instantly cut this group, your group size in half, if not smaller. It's just a fantastic shooting aid. And we have a particular one that we ask that they bring. It goes by several names. It's a GI web sling. It's a U.S. Marine Corps web sling. It's a loop sling. And they come in nylon, they come in cotton, either one's adequate. Remember, you're looking for a loop sling or a web sling. Get them online for, I don't know, $8 or $10. You can get them, Appleseed has a store that you can buy them through, unless you're in Colorado, because you can't buy things in, from the store in Colorado. But, so we ask that you bring a sling. You're going to be laying in the dirt a good portion of both days, and so you ought to bring either a shooting mat. What we did was just bring some scrap carpet and just something to lay on. Also, if you've got, if you're getting older like I am, you might need elbow pads or knee pads because we're, again, we're laying in the ground. Let's see, what else might you need? If you had a couple of extra magazines for your rifle, that would be good. Two magazines is adequate. Three or four is better because sometimes the magazines will malfunction and that gives you a keeps you in the game if you have an issue with equipment. We're really kind of hard on the rifles. If we, most people have not shot 150 to 200 rounds 2 days in a row in their rifles. And we're laying in the dirt and we shoot. Doesn't matter what the weather is. As long as it's safe, we keep shooting. So we shoot in the snow. We shoot in the rain. We shoot in the blowing dust as long as you can do it safely. And so it's really tough on the rifles. So it would be good that you had a rifle that you'd shot before. Run a couple hundred rounds through it just to make sure it functions, and then that you clean it and have a way to keep it clean on the shoot, because we have lots of issues, equipment issues. We ask your rifles to do things that they don't have to do. And I'm trying to think, what else do you? Yeah.
One quick question I had is, you know, is everybody shooting at the same time? So in other words, if I was to bring my family out of eight, mm-hmm. do I need eight rifles, or can we?
Yeah.
Or do we swap out, or how does that work?
Nope. Everyone should have their own rifle. And because everyone does shoot at the same time. The way I would run a shoot, oh, let me finish the equipment list because I was almost done. And then I'll get, if I don't get back to that, remind me. So you also should bring a chair so you can sit, and then bring food and lots of water, sunscreen, those kind of things, personal items. Because it's two very, very long days, and if we do our job right, we wear you out, but you still have a smile. So I think that's rough off the top of my head. That's the equipment list. So back to, do everyone needs a rifle? Yeah, they do. What we'll do is a bit of instruction, and we'll shoot some rounds. And then we'll do another bit of instruction, and we'll shoot some rounds. We'll do some history, then we'll do some instruction, and we'll shoot the rounds. I try not to spend more than about 10 minutes on any one thing so that you're not sitting there listening to a two-hour lecture. Other folks run them differently, and that's great. Whatever works for them is fine. But that's how I would run a shoot. And so you're only shooting throughout the day small portions, small amounts at a time. And so it's really if you had to share a rifle, we could only do half the instruction that we would normally do, because it would hold up everything. And so we encourage folks to each have their own rifle. And again, in your case, we could find eight rifles for you. So.
Nice.
One last question I want to throw in there. Is there like an age restriction?
There is not an age restriction. There is a safety restriction. If you can be safe, you can be on the firing line. If you cannot be safe, you cannot be on the firing line. So the youngest I've had was 5 years old, and he could be safe for about 20 minutes, and that was great. So he would shoot for about 20 minutes, and then he would go sit in a place where we knew he was safe and we could keep an eye on him and eat his sandwich or play in the dirt or whatever he was going to do. And when he was ready to shoot again, he would come up to me and say, I want to shoot again. I said, great, and we'd put him back on the line for another until he was not wanting to shoot anymore. And that works just fine. Conversely, if you're 50 years old and you can't be safe, then you're not old enough. I will not let you stay on my line if you're not safe. Absolutely. The biggest thing we have at Appleseed is safety. If it's not a safe line, we will shut that line down and we'll call it a day. So,
nice.
So to answer your question, no age limit at all.
Okay. Now, One last question we have for you is, you know, we've got our event coming up here in May. And for those that are listening that haven't been to one of our events, my question to you is, what are you guys going to be doing at this event?
So, glad you asked. We're going to have a pellet gun line. We will have a line of 5 pellet guns, so anybody can come and shoot pellets with us. If you want, we'll give you a little bit of instruction. Most of the folks that show up and shoot are kids, but once the kids are on the line, we try and get mom and dad down there with them because we want this to be a family event, something that is kind of a lifelong something that the family does together. And shooting is a great sport. There's lots of things that people can learn. In order to shoot well, there's lots of things you have to be. You have to be reasonably mature. You have to pay attention. You have to have some skills other than just shooting. And so we encourage the whole family to get down on the line, and it's usually the you know, a family with a couple of kids, and we want our kids to shoot. Oh, that's great. And so we sign them up to shoot, and then I'll say to the mom, well, how about you? Don't you want to shoot? And it's like, typically, well, I've never shot before. I said, that's great. Come and shoot now. And we'll get mom to be on the line, and then dad's sitting there watching, and we'll say, well, why don't you shoot with them? And he says, I already know how to shoot. Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but why don't you get down there and shoot with them anyway? And so at times we get a whole family down shooting pellet guns together. And usually what happens, I don't think we've ever had anybody come off our line, pellet gun line not smiling. It's kind of a fun thing. And it's usually because mom and dad are so proud of their, you know, 4 or 5 year old or however old they happen to be, that the kid is holding up his target. He got one pellet in the target and he is just thrilled, and because he's never done anything like that before. She's never done anything like that. And so it's a great experience. We sometimes have quite a long line, people wanting to shoot our pellet guns. So we'll have that open to anybody, any age. Your kids can come again, Ron.
We'll
accommodate them.
You know, it's funny you say that because I was just in their room this morning, you know, getting them up for the day, and I remember that hanging on their wall, right next to their bed, is their target that they got from you guys.
Yep, that's great because we want people to, you know, the kids to take their targets home and remember those, and remind them that, yeah, maybe they want to shoot some more, maybe they want to come to an Appleseed. Also at our booth, we'll talk with folks as long as they would like to talk with us. We'll tell stories. We'll do. We talk, of course, about Appleseed. The whole point is trying to get people to come to an Appleseed, and so it's an opportunity for folks who maybe they're not sure what Appleseed is, or they've heard about it, but they're, you know, what are you guys really up to? What's really your agenda? Those kind of things, and we'll talk with people as long as they'll talk with us. The other thing we'll be doing at this expo is, and again, this is off the top of my head, so you'll be the one to correct me. We're going to be doing two one-hour sessions of telling our stories, both Friday and Saturday, one hour each Friday and Saturday. And then there will be a stage, as I understand it, there will be a children's kind of area. And we'll be doing some instruction there. One day we'll be just talking about basic, you know, what is a rifle? How do you stay safe with a rifle? What's the trigger? Just the parts, just basic firearms information, and letting kids come up, and we'll probably have pellet guns there that they can handle without pellets in them, of course, and then encourage them to come practice those things on our pellet gun line. The next day, if I remember correctly, we're going to be doing an hour of marksmanship instruction. So how do you use a sling? How do you align sights? How do you pull the trigger? Those kind of things. So we'll be on a stage just doing the early fundamentals, if you will, of shooting a rifle. And if I remember right, so you correct me, those are the things that we're going to be doing at this expo.
That's right. You will be on all three stages. So they have a session on our kids stage, a session on our 101 stage, which is our basic stage, kind of learning from the ground up, and then they're on the main stage. So that was very good.
Okay.
Got it all down. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour, so we have to go ahead and take a commercial break. Jim, thank you very much for joining us and letting us know all about Appleseed.
Absolutely. And, thank you for the opportunity.
And if you guys want any additional information, you can go to www.appleseedinfo.org. They have on their website, they've got information about how you join. There's a little map on the right-hand side that you can click and pick your state and find out what events are happening in your state. And, you know, it's fantastic reading to find out why they do this. And if you can participate, I am now a card-carrying member. So, and signed up for my shoot so I don't embarrass myself at the next show. I want that rifleman rocker. I want to be able to, or badge to say that I actually achieved it. So I guess I got to go and learn to shoot. So it's a good thing to do. All right. Thank you very much. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon before the event.
All right. Thanks, Ron.
Thanks.
All right, guys. Take care. All right, guys. We are going to get a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to give you guys some more information about what's going on and get ready to talk to our next guest, which is Patrice Lewis. So we'll talk to you guys back in 2 minutes.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers@sunoven.com. That's preppers@sunoven.com.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwood Homes Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci. That was good information, wasn't it, Colorado?
Oh, yeah, that was great. I love talking with Jim. He's awesome.
Yeah, he and his wife, I hope Kim's out there listening. We miss you. Now she dresses up in costume to get the information out there. They are very patient with the kids and with the people that come and ask questions at the shows. They're a great asset to our shows, and we appreciate it. This hour is brought to you by our partners at Inner Health Botanical, innerhealthbotanical.com. And you know, one of the things I love about these guys, and we talked about it two shows ago, we had one of their people on live. Was it Steve? I don't remember if we. I think it was Steve that we had on live. Ron?
No, it was Darren. It was Darren.
It was Kretta. Darren. All right.
That's right.
And both Colorado and Ron and I are huge fan of their Inner Food. Inner Food is a instant nutrition shake, I guess it will, or powder that you can mix with all kinds of juices and everything else, and it gives you a well-balanced boost of energy and has lots and lots of things. The Inner Food is highly digestible. It absorbs easy into your body, and it's the best way to get your vitamin and nutrients, through an easy system. And it's 100% certified organic, gluten-free, raw, and vegan. I mean, I don't know how many things can say that. Again, organic, gluten-free, raw, and vegan. Now, and both Colorado and I are both meat eaters, but I think we're both pretty much fans of the organic and the gluten-free. I don't know about the raw and the vegan part. What about you?
You know, this stuff is so good, though. I mean, this is, you know, we talk about it every expo. This is the stuff that keeps us going, keeps us on our feet and moving all day long, because an expo is a lot of work. We're always running back and forth and answering questions and escorting people and helping people out. And I tell you what, this stuff is just amazing.
Right. Well, anyway, Inner Food promotes powerful nutrition, balanced energy all day long, increased stamina, healthy, radiant skin, although neither one of us need that because we're beautiful. Yeah, healthy liver. The question is, are you powered by Inner Food? Get rid of your coffee. Get rid of the other things. Get Inner Food. www.innerhealthbotanicals.com. Get your Inner Food when you can. So let me tell you, I got an announcement to make to you before Patrice gets on here. And this is going to come to as a surprise to Colorado Ron. I'm doing a new radio show.
What? Are you leaving me?
No. I'm still doing Saturdays and everything else. And hopefully I didn't want to commit you to two shows. So hopefully every couple of weeks I'll have you on to kind of co-host with me and everything else. But starting next Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'm doing Bubba's Bookshelf. I'm taking the bookshelf, the segment that we took, that we started a couple of months ago that we don't have time to do in a 3-hour show anymore, and just rolling it into Friday nights. Isn't that cool?
Wow. I'm shocked. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I thought we would do is give it a try and go out there, and every week, since I like reading these books so much, I just finished Lisa Bedford's book. And I feel like a survivor mom now. And, bringing people on and just talking about their book and kind of saying, hey, this is one I recommend and this one's I don't. And every week having a different person pop on, because I know it's tough on you. Colorado Ron's got a huge family, And I think the Saturday mornings only interferes with his schedule, I hope. But I know Friday nights at 7 p.m. was kind of difficult because he had things going on. He was always rushing to get back to the show because his Fridays are always full.
That's true.
My hope was that every couple of weeks I could have a different co-host and say, all right, this week's with Colorado Ron, this week's with Nurse Amy, this week's with this, and always have someone different sitting in the other seat and kind of going with it. So talked about it with Adam and with Steve, and the spot was still open. We were running best ofs, and I said, let me give it a shot. So what do you think?
I like it. I like it. That's great. So so you're going to do, like, book reviews and give us save me some time on which books I should be reading and which ones aren't worth my time. Is that right?
Well, yeah, we hope. I mean, we'll go ahead and we'll review the books and everything else and hopefully get some of the authors on there. And I know, I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything, but I know you're working on something, aren't you?
Oh, man. Yes, I am, actually. It's just about
done. Put him on the spot. take a couple of minutes and tell us what you're working on.
Well, okay. So the thing is everybody comes to me and says, okay, well, I've read this book or I've read that book, and I need to get prepared. I need to go get 5 acres of land, and I need to do all this stuff. And, you know, I try to tell people you don't need to do that in order to get started, in order to be prepared. And so what I did is basically as I researched what's going on in Greece, I researched what happened in Argentina with the economic collapse down there, and I researched, you know, all the more recent problems in all these other countries, and you know, I checked out their crimes, what was going on, how things got, how bad it got, and anyway, how things played out. And so I wrote a book on, I don't know the title yet, but it's basically Prepare Where You Stand. And that means, 99% of the people still live in neighborhoods, and there's no reason to go out and buy 5 acres. Or 10 acres or 40 acres and be in the middle of nowhere to call yourself prepared. So the book is about preparing your home in a neighborhood or prepare where you stand, basically. So whether you're in a neighborhood or you live on 1 acre, half acre, whatever. So it goes through, security. It goes through food storage. It goes through emergency power backup systems, all that stuff. And how to integrate it all, how to get it all connected, how to get your home secure and locked down so that you're not worried about any any intruders, those types of things. So that's pretty much the gist of the book.
Well, and that's interesting because it's I've known Colorado Ron for a while now, and we're doing the radio show and we do a bunch of things together. And one of the interesting things about Colorado Ron is he is definitely the urban prepper, to be sure. I mean, if you drove down a street, you it looks like any other street in America, any other suburb of America, and you kind of go down and you wouldn't be able to identify that a prepper lives there. It looks like an everyday house, but he's definitely prepared. And when he told me his idea about, everybody else talks about getting off the grid or trying to do all this other stuff. And he and his wife, Heather, who is probably the better half of Colorado Ron as far as the prepping is concerned.
Most definitely.
God bless her. This is a woman who really lives the lifestyle. Colorado Ron and I talk a good game, and we go out there and we do it. But it's actually the wives that actually have to do all the stuff for us. Yeah, so this is a woman that's out there canning and grinding wheat and planting the gardens and everything else, and we go and talk about it on the air.
Exactly.
We move the big stuff. I mean, we put in the water and do all that other things. We carry the stuff for them. But other than that, so when he said it, told me his ideas, all these other people are talking about, like you said, going off the grid or doing things out there. And what about us? What about the guys that are just going to, with what they have, are going to go and make a stand? What about us? And he said he was going to do it with this book, and I thought, wow, what a great idea. So I wanted to throw this out there because I want to mention my new book show, so that way when I can get a first edition when he gets done writing, and maybe I can get the manuscript, and then I can actually have him as a guest on the show before he actually goes and signs something, and I won't be able to talk to him because I have to go through a publicist.
Well, we'll see. We'll have him my agent.
Listen to this. I've already got a we'll see. He doesn't even have an agent yet. We've already got a we'll see. Man, first I get. So this is the way the show is permanently going to go. We're going to change the name from Self-Reliance Exposed to Self-Reliance Beating Up Bubba or something like that. Because no matter who it is on the show, I get picked on. And I hope this shows you guys how honest our show is because every week we come on here, and then every week someone points out the lack of skill that Bubba Da Vinci has, and Colorado Ron gets to go out there and talk about the things he's doing, and then everybody gets to mention all the things that I've screwed up. So there you go. This is the way the show should be.
That's right. It's even. We got to do what we got to do.
Yeah, well, okay. So anyway, guys, starting next week, next Friday, April 6th, please join me for Bubba's Bookshelf, 8 p.m., I'll be putting up on the Facebook page here this coming week who I'll have on my first guest, and maybe I'll get lucky and get Colorado Ron for a second guest. We'll see. I'll talk to his agent. So coming up, we will be talking to Patrice Lewis. You know, we talked to Patrice before. You know, she is a homeschooler. She does a home business. There's lots and lots of things that, and she's actually going to be another guest on our panel sessions, like Jackie Clay that we talked to last week.
Awesome. She's a wealth of knowledge. I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always surprised when we talk to these women, not because they're women, but when we talk to them about all the things that they've done to get where they are today. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to bring her online right now. I hear she's finally here. Patrice, are you online?
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How's the weather?
Morning.
How's the weather? It poured and poured and poured yesterday. Our poor beasties were so miserable.
Oh, no. Now, you guys are right on the Washington border. You're like in Idaho or you're in Washington, right?
We're up in the Idaho Panhandle, quite close to the Washington border, yes.
Right.
That's beautiful country up there.
It is gorgeous country.
So how long have you guys lived in that area?
In this area for 8 years. And then prior to that, we spent 10 years in rural Southwest Oregon.
Rural Southwest Oregon. So are you originally from the West Coast?
Well, depends on how far back you go. As a kid, I lived in New York State. And then my folks transferred to California when I was 10.
That's basically a West Coaster. I say if you've been any place for more than 15 years, you get to adopt it.
Unless you don't want to adopt it.
Well, we
didn't care for California, so we left as soon as we could.
Now you guys, you and your husband run a home business. And on top of that, you guys are basically, I hate to use the term homesteaders, but you guys are homesteaders also, correct?
Correct, yes.
And remind everybody, now, I don't know if you got my order the other day, so I'm going to throw it out there because I want to ask because I hate to find out you didn't get it.
No, we did get it.
Okay. They make beautiful tankards. You know, they're made out of wood. I already own one. And then they're coming to our show in Colorado Springs in May. And so I sent her an order saying, hey, here's four more, because my daughters have been wanting new ones, and we do the Renaissance fairs every once in a while. So I ordered new cups from her, buds. And so I was pretty excited. So how long have you guys been doing that?
18 years, actually.
18 years.
18 years. Now, ever since we left California and moved to Oregon, we started our business in 93. Goodness, it's coming up on 19 years now. And it's kind of been a wild, wacky way to support ourselves, but it's pretty much what we've done for a long time.
And now, did you guys make that decision? I'm kind of jumping in here because let me take a step back. Patrice is going, like I said, going to be one of our panelists for our Women of Prepping panel at the Self-Reliance Expo on May 18th and 19th, along with Jackie Clay and Amy Alton, Nurse Amy, and Lisa Bedford, and Kellyn Bishop, and am I missing anybody? I think that's it, right, Ron?
I think that's it, yep.
And Patrice is going to be talking, her two topics of conversation that we'll be addressing with her are homeschooling and home business. And that's quite, I probably should have said that before I segue and started asking her about how long she's been doing her home business. So I get a little excited when I talk to you, Patrice, because I love the stuff that you do. I follow your blog. I love when you do little quirky things, like you have your daughter on there when you guys are cooking and things like that. It makes it fun. So, did you start the business because you were trying to find something to do as part of your homesteading, or did it happen the other way around? Were you homesteading and going, ooh, look, this is something we can do?
A little of both. When we moved, we made the classic number one error in moving to the country because we moved without jobs. So I was in graduate school, and my husband was casting around for employment. He was a geologist by training. And 5 months went by, and we couldn't find any work. And that's not a good position to be in. So Rather out of desperation, my husband took an existing hobby, which was woodworking, and he decided to try his hand at making these wooden tankards. And the reason we went ahead with that is we had been doing Renaissance fairs for years. We were old Ren rats, as we called ourselves, and our friends just loved the prototype tankards that he made. So he thought, you know, maybe there's a market in it. So we made a bunch, and we went to a show, and I remember it was Memorial Day weekend of 93, and that's kind of our official going into business date. And we went up to this event, and it was an outdoor event, and this being Oregon, it poured solid for 3 days. Goodness, and we were just soaked. And nobody bought a thing. I mean, it was just a miserable experience. We're sitting there in this tent just dripping stuff on our tankards, and it was awful. And about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the clouds broke apart, and the rain stopped, and the sun came out. And so everyone thought, hey, we're going to do some shopping. And so they started coming, you know, passing by the booth and noticing our product and started trickling in and then pouring in and then just tsunamied in. It was just amazing. And we were selling tankards so fast that we hardly had time to restock the shelves, and money was literally leaking out of our cash box. And I think in 2 hours we made $1,500.
Wow.
And,
wow.
Then after that, the clouds moved back in. It started to pour again. Everybody left, and that was the end of it. So
you were hooked.
We were happy. We'd gone for 5 months without hardly any money coming in, and suddenly we realized there was a market for these things, especially at living history events such as Renaissance fairs and medieval recreation events and things like that. So it's kind of it was a wacky way to get into business, but that was our initial event. We drove home absolutely soaked to the skin and grinning like idiots. which isn't to say that all of our monetary woes were solved after that. We pretty much spent 10 years living in poverty because we were trying to learn how to operate a business. We really had no way how to do it, no knowledge of how to do it. We just learned by hook or by crook. And so gradually, we honed our business skills and our products and our manufacturing techniques and our selling techniques, and we started doing wholesale instead of retail and all kinds of little things that kind of helped get us on our feet again. And one of the reasons we worked so hard to do that, I mean, it would have been easy just to give it up and find a job. The trouble is one of the tickets to true country living is to be able to make a living from where you are. And if we didn't want to be forever tied to an umbilical cord of a city, namely having to commute, we had to get that business off the ground. And so that was really our motivating factor for so many years, is if we don't get this business off the ground, and we'd say this through gritted teeth, then we're going to have to go back to commuting again, and we didn't want to do it.
So based on the
freedom from that, you know, 10 years later when we were ready to upgrade to a larger piece of property, we had the freedom to go to look anywhere as far out in the country as we wanted to because we worked from home.
That's very cool, and you're going to be covering that as one of the topics at the event. And I think it'll be very interesting for people because I know a lot of people are looking for that niche, which is a good segue. I have a quick question for you because I was reading your blog, and you actually have a couple, but the one I always tend to read is The Rural Revolution.
Actually, that's my only blog. I have a website, but I never update it.
Oh,
so
that's
probably woefully behind the times. PatriceLewis.com. I never go to it myself. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. So this is the one you sent me initially, and so this is the one I always go to. And you wrote an article, I want to say it was about where there is a niche, you know, and you were talking about a new group, Survivalist Singles, that's out there. And I don't know if that was a pass on. Was that an article you got from Lisa Bedford?
No, actually, a reader sent it to me.
A reader sent it to you.
Yeah, he just said, are you aware of this? And he sent me the link, and I clicked on it. It's like, well, this is kind of a nifty concept.
Well, and so here's the thing, though, and I'm throwing this out there because I'd love you to address this if you can, when we're at our show, which is you're 100% right with finding a niche and kind of going out there and finding something you can do from home, but you also have to be careful on how you do it. Because, you know, somebody sent this to me a couple of days ago when these guys launched and people were passing it around Facebook. And from everything that I've seen on you, your business is set up properly and everything else. But a lot of people go out there and throw up these businesses and don't form an LLC or don't do things the right way. And what I'm finding about the survival singles, when someone said it to them, is asking for an interview, is these guys aren't even, I can't even find where they're an entity.
Well, you have to understand, that's how we started, too. We started not knowing the slightest thing about going into business. Now, this is prior to the Internet, or at least prior to our familiarity with the Internet. But we made endless mistakes. Oh, my goodness, did we ever make mistakes. So, it, you know, I'm willing to give these guys the benefit of the doubt and say they're going through growth pains.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't disagree with you. It's just, for me, it's kind of scary when you see a business and their legal statement goes, you know, this is a legal agreement between you and us. And we own all your information. It's basically, you know, and you go through their legal disclaimer, and it's probably, but basically we own your photos, we own your information, we own everything, but you don't even know who we are.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it could be that they're going to discover, I don't know anything about their business plan, of course, but it could be that they're going to discover the hard way that that's not the way to conduct their business. Because
yeah,
if enough
yeah.
people object to the idea, or if enough people say, hey, no, you're not owning anything about me, you're not going to sell my data, you're not going to do anything with my photos, enough people complain. If they're a reputable business, they will adjust and compensate for what, in other words, giving them a learning curve.
Right.
Now, if they're just blatantly violating things in, you know, violation of the law, and of course I'm not saying they are, I don't know anything about them, then that's something that also will have to come to light.
But I do believe
you have to operate a business, no matter how small, as ethically as you possibly can. And if ethical means you need to consult with an attorney before posting disclaimers, then that's going to have to be part of it.
Right, right, right. And, guys, just want to make sure, I'm not saying anything bad about survival of singles. I think the concept is fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's why I posted it. I just thought it was kind of a spiffy idea.
Right. I just want to, you know, I like to play devil's advocate when we do these shows because – you know, I agree with Patrice, and I know Ron does too, is every single person has to go out there, and everybody's watching us with the spotlight right now, all preppers. You know, thanks to Doom Day Preppers and all these other shows, you know, everybody's looking at the prepper community. And the only way we are going to move forward in the self-reliance community is that if everything we do is as she said, above board and open to inspection and things don't pop up. And so hopefully during your session that you can cover things like that. It's like, look, it's not easy, but it's not rocket science either. You just
right.
you know, get out there and find out the information and making sure that you're putting together a good, solid business so you don't get in trouble yourself or any of your family members or things like that. So,
well, a lot of it, too, is with regard to the negative focus that the mainstream media tends to put on preppers, the prepper community. They are naturally going to focus on the most extreme, ridiculous examples they can because that makes news. So it's up to the rest of us to be ambassadors, if you will, for the movement of, you know, we're not tinfoil hat wearers. We are ordinary people. We're crafters. We're doctors. We're attorneys. We're teachers. We're garbage collectors. We're just ordinary people who have what we feel are legitimate concerns about the economic or physical future of our country.
Right, right, right.
I would agree. The You talked about this a little bit before, and I'd like to segue into because we're talking about business and how to you know work from home or work from your you know where you live. Now, how does somebody make a transition from? We got a lot of people that listen to the show, they say you know they live in a neighborhood, let's say, and their dream is to move out, get 5 acres, 10 acres, whatever it might be. How does somebody make that transition where they just quit everything, you know, and move out to the country? Because that's going to be a tough transition. Not everybody has, you know, a couple hundred thousand or, you know, $100,000 to go out and buy the land and start from scratch. So I'm just curious, how does somebody make that transition to finally decide, wake up one day and say, I'm doing it?
Well, a lot of it is, as you kind of just hit the nail on the head right there, a lot of it is a mental adjustment, saying, I've had enough, I'm doing it. And that was, and you have to say that to a certain extent between gritted teeth because it's not always going to be, well, most of the time it won't be easy, at least at first. But a lot of it is that mental adjustment. I am, by golly, going to do this. Okay, that's your first step. But a number of issues addressing if you're going to move rural. Number one has got to be to get out of debt. You cannot drag debt with you into the country because almost guaranteed your income will drop. Unless you have the absolute good fortune to take your job with you, i.e. you're telecommuting with an existing job or something like that, which, you know, hey, more power to you. But if you're not that fortunate, then you've got to get out of debt. You cannot drag credit card debt, student loan debt, car payment debt. You can't drag that into the country because you'll have a very hard time paying it off. And I think probably debt has killed more rural dreams than almost anything else. But there's also a number of other things. Don't be afraid to start humbly or start small. You know, a single wide on 5 acres can be pretty cheap. You know, not everyone's going to have their absolute perfect farmhouse, dream house crop up in a price that they can afford. But if you're starting off with this cruddy little, you know, single wide mobile home that was built in 1960 on 5 gorgeous acres, you can always upgrade. And so if your initial outlay is fairly cheap, you can fix it up, sell it, start again, you know, this kind of thing. You can always upgrade. Nothing says that wherever you move is going to be for the rest of your life. The third thing I would recommend is just what we've touched on before, which is to start cultivating independent sources of income. Notice that plural, sources, plural. It's rare that you can make your living exclusively from one iron in the fire, as I call it. We did it. But we always had to supplement little bits here and there because it's a hard way to make a living. And unless what you're making or creating or doing for a living is absolutely essential, you're always vulnerable to, you know, disruptions from, you know, economic woes or suddenly nobody wants your product, nobody can afford your product, whatever it is. So you need to develop multiple streams of income. Multiple irons in the fire, as I call it. And that way, if one thing dries up, you're not destitute. You're not left destitute. So that's some of the things that I would recommend. But there's a lot of things about moving to the country. A lot of it has to do with an attitude adjustment. You're going to live on beans and rice while you save your money, pay off your debt, start saving a down payment, things like that. And a lot of people just don't want to take the time to do that. They want to just plunge in with both feet first, and that's not a good way to do it, especially if you're going to have an income drop.
Well, so, yeah, that's a good point. Sorry. One of the questions I have is, my wife and I actually thought about this, and we're looking at different scenarios, and it seems like the obvious first move, at least here in Colorado, would be to, you know, start that garden and start hitting up farmers markets and selling goods at a farmers market. Do you see a lot of people doing that when they go to the country?
In terms of selling their product and selling their vegetables and trying to make a living that way?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Or in terms of learning the skill of gardening?
Well, yeah, well, both. Well, hopefully they have a pretty decent skill at that when they go out there, but yes, I mean, but yeah, selling your goods at a farmer's market, I guess.
As a means of making a living, it's not very good, and I'll tell you why. First of all, it's seasonal. What are you going to do until your vegetables become ripe? What are you going to do after your vegetables are completely sold out? And it's not likely you can make a living from selling basically what they call a truck garden. You can't necessarily make a living selling vegetables. You can, however, supplement yourself selling vegetables, to which I say, yay-hoo. But also the skill of gardening is devilishly hard. I just don't happen to have a green thumb, so it's always been a struggle for me to garden. It doesn't help that we happen to move to a place that has very heavy clay soil. So we can't just plant a seed and expect it to grow. We've had to cultivate raised beds. We have to deal with lots of composted manure worked into the soil, this, that, and the other. Lots and lots and lots of factors can untrack you from your dreams of making a living selling vegetables. So it's kind of a thing. It's kind of the idea of don't be naive going into it and thinking that whatever your initial plan will be a gold mine, because it won't.
That's a good point. So,
I don't mean to be very negative.
Well,
no,
it's true.
The trouble is lots and lots of people will move rural with no idea what they're getting themselves into. Now, we would not give up this lifestyle for all the gold in China. We just love it. We just love it out here. But we've seen too many people who come here, you know, starry-eyed and naive and think, oh, I'll just plant a garden and it will grow and the deer will never get it and everything will be perfect and I'll sell my vegetables and we'll just live a happy little life. No, it doesn't work that way. So I think I spend a lot of time trying to convince people to look at country living realistically. And sometimes they don't want to hear what I have to say, but it's, you know, take it from someone who's been there, done that. You've got to look at it realistically.
Well, and so I hope that – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Frank.
It's your turn. Sorry.
Okay. I was just going to ask. I mean, I hope that you'll have time to talk because I think a lot of people are afraid to ask the questions and find out. I mean, you know, not that you shot down Colorado Ron, but a classic example is, you know, he goes and he thinks of something. You probably don't think things all the way through. And I'm enjoying this so much because usually I'm the one that gets knocked down. You should see me. I'm over here doing the happy dance going, you got one wrong. No, I'm kidding.
On the other hand, we got it all wrong, too. We went in here, you know, we started out absolutely doing the wrong thing, which is why I can speak from experience.
Right.
But we had the determination and the grit to make sure we were going to correct the wrongs, that we were going to still make it, you know, living in the country no matter what it took, you know, big attitude adjustment, if you will. And it can work, but you have to understand that you'll be making mistakes along the way.
Right. And like I said, I pretty much have lived my experience wrong so far, and we talk about it every single week and all the mistakes that I make. I hope that people will realize and want to come up there that it's better to ask the questions and find out what you're missing, you know, what you're not seeing, than to just kind of jump into something and not have asked the question, which is why we have you coming on the panel and talking about this stuff, is because you have had the real life experience and you're willing to admit some of the issues that they have.
Every issue we had.
Are you going to have time to sit down with people if they want to come up and say, you know, here's the kind of the ideas I'm thinking at, and you know, especially on both things, not only the home business, but the property. I mean, because Colorado Ron and I have talked about this several times, and actually I think last week we had the question that was posed to Jackie Clay, which is, how do you find that piece of property? I mean, where do you even begin to look? And obviously, since you guys moved twice and you have the attitude, you know, you're not always going to be in the first place that you want to stay. You know, how did you make that decision on where you guys were going?
Well, when we moved to Oregon, it was kind of a result, oddly enough, of my going to graduate school. There was a college with a graduate program that I was interested in nearby where we lived. So that, first of all, focused on us on the general region. It's not that we were particularly attracted to the region because of its terrain or climate. It just happened to have the school I needed. So that's kind of how we ended up in Oregon, and we absolutely loved it there. Our house was just wonderful, but it was only 4 acres, and we eventually realized we wanted more. And after that, when we decided we were going to move, we spent 2 years looking in Oregon for property that met our criteria, our price range, things like that. Couldn't find it. And it was after that we started broadening our search. We decided we wanted to stay in the Northwest, and so we were looking to Washington and Idaho and Montana. And oddly enough, and we spent probably 2 years searching there. I mean, we did not jump into this quickly. We really, really, really carefully researched what we wanted. But oddly enough, we ended up settling in Idaho because of its homeschooling laws. That was the one deciding factor. But it's the kind of thing, the first thing you have to decide is what kind of climate you want. And a lot of people don't like cold weather. A lot of people don't like hot weather. We happen to be the kind that I just cannot take heat. Southwest Oregon gets very, very hot in the summertime, and I was miserable. So we wanted a place that was cooler and that had snow, and I think you'll agree that North Idaho fills that in abundance.
yeah.
Other people, I have a friend up here who moved here from Tennessee, and she just can't handle the cold. And so I think very shortly she and her husband are going to be moving back to the southeast because they need something warmer and with longer seasons. There's climate for everybody. There's something for everybody. So the very first thing you have to do is decide what kind of climate you want. And
so
then
is that
start
property
researching.
For sale?
I beg your pardon?
I said, let us know when that property goes up for sale, then we can be your neighbors.
We actually have a property near us for sale, but it's kind of a mess, and you'd have to do a lot of fixing up on it.
It's okay. Colorado Ron's built for Hollywood.
You could become Idaho Ron.
That's right, Idaho Ron. Oh, man. Okay, so did you guys homeschool right away? Were you homeschooling when you moved already from, you know, from Oregon to Idaho? Were you guys already doing homeschooling? Or
yeah.
Is that something you got into when you got there?
No, we've homeschooled from the start. Our girls were 5 and 7 when we moved to Idaho, but we had homeschooled them from the start.
And what made you decide to go in to start homeschooling?
A number of factors. Let me tell you a little story, which seems like a strange aside, but it's kind of what was one of the things that made us realize schools weren't quite what they used to be. We were contacted one time from somebody who needed to use our wood shop to do a project and wanted to use our tools. Well, the trouble is we didn't know this person very well. We didn't know his experience on the tools, and we were afraid of liability reasons. And so we said, no, you can't use our tools, but here, let me get you the contact information for a local high school's wood shop, and perhaps they would let you work the tools there. So I'm going through the phone book, and I'm looking at this particular high school, and I see, you know, the English department and the language department and this department, that department, and then they had a daycare. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I graduated high school in 1980. There would never have been a daycare at our local high school. And it was just the first inkling that things aren't quite the same as they used to be. And this is before we had kids. So our first daughter was born in late 1995, December of 95, and, of course, we had a number of years before we had to really think about her schooling. But meanwhile, I had a friend who got started on her children before I did, and she and her husband were homeschooling, and they were just absolutely loving it. And so we decided to give it a try. My husband and I are both highly educated. We both have master's degrees in the sciences. So we felt very qualified. And we've just never regretted that decision. I mean, I've got two teenagers right now. One is almost 14, the other is 16, and I can't speak more highly of them. Most people have conflicts with their teens, and we've never had that issue. And I really do attribute a lot of it to homeschooling.
Well, when you said you moved to Idaho because of the homeschooling laws, what was so different about those versus, like, Oregon or any other state?
Oregon's not bad, actually. But the trouble is, of course, every state has its own particular set of homeschooling laws. We have a very strong feeling that it's our children and our responsibility to educate them and our decision to decide what they learn, in other words, to set their curriculum. And most states have anywhere from light to ranging to rigid restrictions on what homeschoolers can and cannot do. And oddly enough, what both Washington and what surprised me was Montana have fairly restrictive homeschooling laws. Restrictive meaning you have to have annual tests, or you have to submit your curricula, or you know, something that we didn't like. And Idaho has none of that. Now, of course, before anybody starts getting up in arms, this can backfire because we have met people who are allegedly homeschooling their children and doing a lousy job of it. On the other hand, we believe in personal freedom. We believe that children belong to the parents and not to the state. And so there's going to be homeschoolers that fall through the crack. But the number of parents who are doing a splendid job, absolutely phenomenal job in educating their children, far outweighs the bad apples. And, of course, then you have to examine how many kids fall through the cracks in public schools, too. So
Now you say, if I remember correctly, you have two daughters, right?
We have two daughters, right.
Right. How are they adjusting, and how do they like the homestead life and being homeschooled? I mean, I have three daughters, and the move from Texas to rural Iowa was kind of shocking to them initially. And then, you know, do they miss all the social interactivity they would get from going to a high school? I don't think boys mind as much. They kind of just go out in there and do their thing, but I'm always worried about the girls and how they would react to kind of growing up in this lifestyle.
Well, first of all, ours never knew any different. We've never lived in an urban environment since they were born, and we've always had a farm, so they've never known anything different. The biggest issue is finding friends of their age and their interests. And where we are, it depends on how, quote-unquote, isolated you are. We're not, by any stretch of the means, isolated. However, we do have to take steps to make sure our girls have friends and are involved in activities that they enjoy. Both of them take music lessons, and one of them is involved in gymnastics, and the other has an interest in the martial arts, and so we're going to be finding classes for her. And we have to go into the city for those lessons. But you know what? That's the way it goes. You know, we've got kids. They have interests. We need to make sure they're addressed.
How far are you from the city? Just out of curiosity. I mean, what is the, you know, because some, you know, one thing we did, we actually moved to Missouri at one time. And, you know, I thought I was going to retire and be done and wanted to move to the country. But when, you know, we moved a little far because it was, you know, every time my kids needed a pair of shoes, it was 2.5 hours one way. You know, the toilet quit working and I needed the chain and, you know, plunger system for the toilet. And it, you know, it was a 5-hour trip. You know, is that something that's, do you guys live that far out or
no.
You guys live closer?
No, we don't live that far out. We have a couple of towns within a very short drive in, small towns, 1,000 people kind of thing. So they have a small grocery store, small hardware store, things like that. And then once a week, we've arranged their music and gymnastics lessons once a week so that we travel in once a week to go to the city, and we can also do any extra shopping we need. If there's a hardware piece that we don't have, can't get locally, we do a lot of bulk grocery shopping in the city. And it's only about an hour and a quarter away, so it's not too bad. And we just make a day of it.
Nice, nice. Okay. And so you say you do that once a week? And
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, how far was that?
About an hour and a quarter's drive.
Okay. All right. And then, let's see, up in the Panhandle, what is one of the bigger towns up there? Was it Coeur d'Alene?
Coeur d'Alene is the biggest city in the region, yes, and that's got about 40,000 people. Okay. And nearby is kind of across, under the Washington side, is Spokane, and that's got, upwards of 150,000, I think. So that tends to be where we do our bulk shopping. That's where the girls have their music lessons, things like that.
That sounds very similar to Iowa. I mean, Des Moines not that large either.
Funny thing is, when we moved out here, prepping wasn't even on our radar. I mean, it wasn't even remotely in our scope. And so it just so happened that we settled in a place that, by prepping standards, is considered a very attractive location. But had we known then what we know now, we probably would have moved further toward the mountains, further away from the urban centers. And then, as you said, we would have to travel 2.5 hours to get to the grocery store. But we have kids, and we had to consider their needs. And moving as remote as my husband and I might have liked would not have been a good decision for the children.
Well, and that's what I find tough when, you know, especially, like I said, we have 6 kids. And, you know, we tried it for about 6 months. And like, you know, like you said, you've seen people that move out there and then move back. And it just, for what we needed and what we were doing at the time, it just wasn't realistic for us. And so, at the time we decided that we'd go ahead and move back to Colorado. But you know, it's always been in the back of our head and it's always kind of this nagging thing, you know, every time we're driving, you know, Bubba and I were just talking about our trip to the East Coast and, you know, we're driving out there in rural Tennessee and Arkansas and seeing this beautiful countryside and we're thinking, man, you know, it's always at the back of my head that I'd like to do it again. But I need to be a little bit more realistic in what our family needs are.
Right. And, you know, as I said, if it was just up to my husband and I, we would probably move another hour and a half inland toward the mountains, much more rural area. But right now this suits us. This satisfies us. The kids have access to the special interests they have, you know, lessons and such for the special interests they have. And we're among neighbors. We're not living out in the middle of nowhere. We've got neighbors on 3 sides. Granted, they're a quarter mile away, but everybody out here is a neighbor. So it's a very good compromise, I think.
Now, what do you do about situations like prom? I mean, are your daughters are both high school age, correct? Theoretically, according to...
I suppose one could be called junior high school, but I'm sorry, I missed one word there. What do we do about what now?
What do you do about things like prom and things like that? Do you allow them to go and participate in the local high school or you know... Do they really even care? And that's my company.
They don't give a rip. They could care less. it tends to be, things like that tend to be built up more in the minds of critics than in the actual homeschoolers. There have certainly been situations where in areas of high homeschooling activity where there's a very good organized homeschooling group where they'll actually put their own prom on. But my girls have just never even crossed their mind to be interested.
See, I think I agree with you. I think that it seems like a lot of people build these things up. And I'm hoping that these are the kind of questions that we get at the show because, you know, I don't think that homeschooling and moving out to a rural area is as big a change other than just learning all the new things that you have to learn as everybody thinks. I think Colorado Ron was an exception. I mean, he was 2.5 hours out, but I think you can find a lot of places. I lived in Los Angeles, I lived in California for quite a few years, both the Bay Area and Los Angeles. And it's not uncommon to have 2.5 hours each direction to work just because of traffic.
Right.
So, I mean, a 2.5 hour drive or even an hour, you know, an hour drive is obviously better, is not uncommon to what people know, but the mindset is because you're out in the middle of nowhere, it just seems further.
And, you know, too, just because you're isolated doesn't mean you have to keep your kids away from activities they might be interested. We've got some friends, for instance, who live in a very, very rural area of Washington State. Most of the northeastern corner of Washington is just totally empty. And they live way the heck out in the middle of nowhere, and their kids had an interest in drama, so they would drive, I think it was an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours one way, to get to a town that had a little children's drama program and let the kids participate in plays. And so that's the kind of thing where it's, you might say it's something you just have to do as a parent. You're going to have to deal with driving. I had a friend when I was in high school who was a very, very good ballerina. And she actually was a dancer with the Oakland Ballet Company. Well, her mother had to drive her 2 hours every one direction every day that she was rehearsing. And they did that for years and years and years. It's just what you've got to do. And being rural doesn't mean, or being urban doesn't mean automatically that your functions are going to be right next door. As you point out, between traffic and highways and everything else, you could be on the road just as long.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Now, well, the other question I always had, and this was something that I ran into a problem with when I moved out to Missouri, was that obviously for me, a nice way for me to make an income was working online. What do you do for, say, high-speed internet? You know, we didn't have TV or anything like that, but it was nice to be able to watch a video, for instance, on YouTube. And you know, the internet that I had was so slow that I had to actually hit play and then come back 5 minutes later, and hopefully it would, you know, I could start watching a YouTube video, which
well, that's exactly what we have. That's exactly our situation. We have a high-speed internet connection, but we have the cheapest available that our local provider offers. So we do the same thing. If we want to watch a five-minute video, it takes 10 minutes to buffer. And so that's just something we're used to. But high-speed internet connection is available almost everywhere, and if it's not, you can usually hook up to a satellite connection, Usenet or, you know, something along those lines. So if you don't have a local provider, then you can usually go with a national provider and use a satellite hookup. Might be a little more expensive, but it's there. And having an online connection, I think, is actually quite important if you're going to live rural. It offers not only instant communication, email and all that, but it offers resources as a homeschooler.
Yeah, and I was always surprised at how much the prices have dropped and how fast everything.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be my father-in-law didn't used to have internet, and they did everything through dial-up. And then we went ahead and went with Hughes, and when they first started, it was outrageous. It was like $200-$300 a month.
Wow.
You know, now it's sub 100. You know, to go ahead and have the satellite, and that's including your channels, because they do bundle packages with. People that don't know, Hughes used to be part of DirecTV or vice versa, and then they sold the company and split up. But you can still get both packages, usually through the same satellite.
Yeah, see, we don't have television reception, and we don't want it. And so we actually got dissatisfied. Pardon me?
I said good for you.
Oh, thank you. We became dissatisfied with our local internet service provider, and so we ended up signing up with HughesNet. Which is a satellite-linked program or service, And we just have the bare bones internet package. We don't want phone service. We don't want television service, anything like that. It's just pure internet. So it's not expensive. It's $60 a month.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and I think they do have a package. So we have about 7 minutes left. Now, I have to segue into one more thing, which is canning. So, I mean, do you do a lot of canning up there, right? How much of your time, I mean, you know, we talked about, you know, going out there and moving out to the country and homeschooling and everything else, and then on top of that, you've got your property that you have to work. How much time do you personally end up spending doing your canning, do you think?
Well, it depends on time of year. I mean, obviously, if the garden's producing, I'm going to be spending more time. But, for instance, I was just illustrating, I don't know if you're aware that I've got three canning booklets, that e-booklets that I am just, they're finished. We just have to figure out how to get them available online for purchase. Very inexpensive price, $1.50 each. So I had to take some pictures of canning some chicken breasts, which was going to be one of the illustrated steps I walk people through. So I just canned up 6 quarts of chicken breast the other day. So it's just a matter of every time you have a day when you're going to be at home, and it doesn't mean you have to be staring at the canner all day. It just means you have to be at home and in the house. Then you just do some canning. It's not a huge deal. It really is not as time-intensive as people think in terms of hands-on working with the food product. It has more to do with just being vigilant on the canner. So you check it every 5 minutes, but meanwhile you just go about your day. So it's not as difficult as people think, as long as you're vigilant.
Are you going to be bringing some of those booklets to the expo?
They're e-publications, and so I can't really bring any per se. I can, however, pass out business cards that lets people know where they can purchase them. But we have a number of publications that we're going to be putting up for sale. I'm just working on one today, in fact, on how to move to the country. So that's going to be one of the publications that will be for sale. But there's an online version. Keeps the cost down that way.
Nice. Are you gonna? Can you send me the link when that's ready? Because I'd like to read that one for sure.
Oh, be happy to. Yeah.
So I have, you know, it's kind of funny. This is going to be very interesting because this will be my family's first year in trying the canning thing. I think Ron's family is old. It's old hat for them. They've been doing it for a while. Last year we missed the season. We were doing the shows, and then by the time I bought everything, it was too late. I missed the season for everything last year. I'm planting vegetables in, you know, in August and September. I completely messed up, but it seems, and I know you say it's relatively simple. I mean, to someone that's moving out of the city and kind of going out here and learning this stuff, it seems ominous. I mean, the first thing you read when you look on the internet is about, you know, pressure cookers blowing up and now, boy, you know, things blowing over and, you know, not doing this and getting bad food because you didn't seal the jars properly, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I have the booklets that I've written, the publications that I've written. One is an introduction to water bath canning, which is suitable for high acid foods such as fruits and pickles and things like that. One is an introduction to pressure canning, which has to be used for all low acid foods such as meats and vegetables and soups and all that. And one is I posted a question on my blog and I said I want all beginning canners to pitch me their questions. What basic questions do you have about canning? And oh my gosh, I was buried with questions. So I put together 100 FAQs on canning that addresses every possible aspect of it that I could think of. And because there's so much misconceptions or so many myths that arise around canning, and it really is simple. You just got to learn the safe procedures. So the idea of exploding pressure canners or botulism poisoning and all that kind of stuff, your fears can be laid to rest by learning the safe procedures.
Well, that's good to know because I'm the one that always has to sample the foods. And my worry is my wife's going to be as good at canning as I am at gardening. So and I'm sure she's probably out in the other room right now listening to this. And
well,
I'll just go people lie when I walk out.
My take on it is that, you know, 99.999% of all food poisonings or exploding canners or anything else that's gone wrong in canning can arise from one of two issues. One is that you were not vigilant, so the pressure in the pressure canner got too high or too low or something like that. Or two, you just employed sloppy canning procedures. For example, the idea that you can can meat in a water bath, because Granny always did it. Wrong. You cannot. It is not safe. And so anybody who tries to can the way Granny did, you know, no offense to Granny, but there's been a lot of developments in microbiology and canning skills and things like that since her day. You've got to employ modern techniques, modern equipment, and be vigilant towards safety and the safe procedures that you need to operate. In other words, you can't think that rules don't apply to you. Well, I can can meat in a water bath because the rules don't apply to me. No, it doesn't work that way. So that's what I try to do in these pamphlets. These booklets I've written, I try to dispel the myths and walk people through safe procedures.
Well, that's great. We are at the bottom of the hour now, so we have to get going. But can you give us the URL for those booklets? Because I think, you know, Colorado Ron and I are both going to be picking up some, and hopefully our audience will be able to do it. And we'll post it on our Facebook and our chat room also.
I can actually give you the website, but it is not yet up and running.
Oh, no. Well, give it to us, and then we can tell people where to go.
Okay. I will let you know as soon as it's up and running. I'll send you that link.
Okay. And your blog is www.rural-revolution.com, correct?
Correct.
All right. We're looking forward to seeing you at the show, Patrice. Thank you for joining us.
I am so looking forward to attending, and I thank you again for inviting me.
It's going to be a blast.
It's our pleasure. We're looking forward to meeting you face-to-face.
All right. We'll see you in May then.
All right, guys. This was Patrice Lewis. You can catch her in Backwoods Home Magazine. She does articles on a regular basis for Backwoods Home Magazine. You can join her at www.rural-revolution.com to find out more and buy one of her tankards because they're awesome. So, all right, guys. We will see you guys in 2 minutes, and we'll be picking up our last hour.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes 6 number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our 1 year plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook. Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Self-Reliance Exposed, part of Backwoods Home Magazine's show. We got Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci here. That was a good segment. I always like talking to Patrice, Ron.
I do too. I love talking to Patrice. She's so knowledgeable, and I love talking to people that have been there and done it. And so, you can tell by the stories that she tells that she's got a lot of experience and a wealth of knowledge.
We've been very lucky on this show. We get to sit around, joke around about things, poke at each other. And we just had some incredibly nice people. I mean, Jackie Clay, Patrice, Jason Akers. I mean, yeah, they're very pleasant people. They're willing to share their information with everybody. And that's basically what our expo's about, what Backwoods Home Magazine's about. I mean, that is sharing the information with everybody.
Absolutely. You know, the thing that's so fun about this is being able to, pick their brain and learn from, their experiences, but also from their mistakes. You know, like she said, they made plenty of mistakes. And so it speeds up the learning curve for us and makes us sound like we know what we're talking about.
That's true. I mean, we got a lot to learn. So who's this hour brought to us by?
Oh, yeah. This hour is brought to us by Sun Ovens. Sun Ovens International. If you guys haven't tried cooking in a Sun Oven, you're missing out. We've used our Sun Oven on a regular basis since we've purchased it, and I can tell you that it is super easy to use. You can even stick the other day, matter of fact, we did this because we had to run and we were going to have a really busy day. So, Paul Munson over there, who owns Sun Oven, told us, point the Sun Oven in the direction the sun will be about dinner time, and stick a frozen chicken in it. And that's what we did. We seasoned it up and did all this stuff, stuck a frozen, rock solid chicken in it, and set it out there. And here we are in the middle of March, and we came home and it was steaming and just falling off the bone, delicious. And so, it's very easy to cook in a Sun Oven, and it's actually very hard to mess it up. So if you guys haven't tried one of those, you've got to check it out. You can go to sunovens.com, and he's got recipes on there. He's got, how-to information and articles on that. And he comes to our expo and does a great presentation that's always standing room only on how to cooking with the sun. So we like that, and I appreciate Sun Ovens for being our sponsor for this last hour.
All right. So I don't know if you can hear. I set up a new office for the show and kind of set up my microphones and everything else. And up to this point, before I got this nice microphone and everything else, I don't think a lot of the background noise got picked up when I put soundproofing inside the room so there wasn't so much ambient noise. And I'm actually going to have to change a habit because I allowed my two old dogs to stay in the room with me. And I don't know if you can hear them in the background, but one of our dogs is a pug, right? The 14-year-old pug. And he's in the background snoring like crazy. And I keep throwing things at him, trying to get him to stop snoring. And it just cracks me up. It's just like, oh, my goodness, stop snoring, stop snoring. So
we can hear him. We can hear him.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, so a couple things. I wanted to kind of get into, Backwoods Home Magazine, great magazine. The issue that's currently out is Facts and Fictions about Apocalyptic Scenarios. That's a tongue twister if you ever had one. And, one of the things, last week we talked to Mad Mike, and he was kind of going over some of the situations that could possibly happen. And he had mentioned, we'd given him the challenge of Fukushima, which wasn't caused by, by man, by not having good buildings and things like that. A tsunami comes in, hits the thing, and now these poor people are having, devastating effects. And, we said, hey, what areas in the United States are there that could be trouble because they have natural disasters and everything else? And he listed a few. But then he threw out there yesterday, because his biggest concern, or one of his biggest concerns, were not the natural disasters that might happen. He had said that he was worried about solar flares and knocking out the power and having the cooling system, problems with the cooling and everything else. And I just posted it up on our blog or on our Facebook and on our chat room. This last week, I guess 2 days ago, there was an article written about a massive solar tornado, five times the size of Earth, that is taking place right now.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah, it's massive. And the photographs of it are unbelievable.
Where's the link?
Look at our chat room. Look at our chat room.
Oh, there it is. Yep.
And you know, and on page 21 of the current magazine, they talk about the Carrington event, which is basically, and so it shows you how good our writers are for the magazine. You know, because in page 21 for the Carrington event, it's basically talking about the concern of EMPs due to solar flare, you know, causing disruption. We're not talking about end of the world scenario. The solar flares are going to come and destroy the Earth. It's the disruption of the EMP to things like our power sources. Everything we have now has electronics in it. And I guess the correlation I'm trying to draw here is this should be a concern to you folks, because it's not Mad Mike spouting it out and saying, oh, this is my, you know, this is what I think, and so be worried. And it's not Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron talking about it. And it's not just Backwoods Home magazine talking about it. You've got NASA talking about it. You've got the, you know, newspapers and talking about these giant solar tornadoes, five times the size of Earth, and being worried about the EMPs. You have Backwoods Home magazine, which is a great source of information, warning you about it. And, you know, when you have this many different sources talking about it, you should be worried. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, the first question I have is, you know, they say this tornado is five times the size of Earth. You know, I'm curious, you know, these other solar flares that we've had, what's the size in comparison? I mean,
half the size.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I mean, these things are, you're looking at these things, and it's just like, holy, you know, how can you not worry about things like this? We're a little speck in the giant solar system, and all this radiation gets thrown at us all the time, and you know, it's got to affect the electrical grids and satellites and things like that. I mean, you know, and this is happening more and more frequently, and you know, we're going to be talking with Mad Mike here in a few minutes, and the interesting thing is he just threw this out the other day. It's like, you know, these are the kind of things that could disrupt the power grid, which when it disrupts the power grid, there's nothing keeping these nuclear plants on safe, because they have backup systems, but the backup systems have electronic components.
Right.
You know,
and
so, you know, what do you do? I mean, are you prepared for things like that, Colorado Ron? I know I'm not.
You know, I think that the biggest problem, at least for me, is, you know, running a business, you know, making those phone calls. You know, will I survive? Yes. You know, will I be able to cook my food? Yeah, I'll be able to do all that stuff. But it's a huge, huge amount of inconvenience and total disruption of our lifestyle the way it is, just because of the simple fact that, you know, I mean, how many times a day do I talk to you on the cell phone? You know, we just grab a cell phone and call each other. You know, and we had that solar flare a couple of weeks ago, and even that little one was a disruption in our phone calls. We kept dropping calls and trying to call each other back, and, you know, we'd touch base three or four times before we were able to stay on a call. And I can just imagine, you know, something that knocks that out completely, and the lack of communication that we would have would be a huge disruption to not only, you know, our lifestyle, but, you know, also the business.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to hear what Mad Mike has to say about, because I think his perspective on it is, forget the inconvenience, things like that. What happens when the cooling tanks have to be, you have to be running water from the river system in to keep these things cool and keeping them from melting down, because there's the electricity's out and there's no backup system and things
like
that.
Yeah, that's an issue.
I mean,
that's a real issue.
It's amazing. I mean, we always worry about us, but the bigger question is what's going on with everybody else? Because I mean, we can prepare, but what you have to also prepare for is the people who didn't prepare. I mean, what happens when Walmart can't use their just-in-time method to fill the stores? You know,
right.
So they don't even know what kind of supplies they need. And what's going to happen when, you know, God forbid you live in an area that's next to a nuclear plant and they're forcing water through and pumping it into the rivers to keep everything cool. And what, you know, just, my God, if I guess all you can do is, you know, plan for the worst, hope for the best, and make sure that you're doing whatever you can do to take care of your family.
Yeah. I guess my cell phone comment was probably.
It's all right. You know, my first thought was, what am I going to do without Netflix? You know, so forget my family. How
all right. I feel better now.
There you go. You know, that's my first concern. Am I not going to be able to catch my, you know, my issues of the Big Bang Theory? I mean, come on. What happens when that thing happens? That's what the solar flares are all about. You know, but come on. Well, we're okay. Guys, we're human, right? I mean, we all love our Big Bang Theory. Let's face it. You probably don't even watch that, do you, Colorado?
No, I don't watch much TV. Sorry. But I do have Netflix, and every once in a while we'll watch a movie or something on there. But it's kind of handy to have it on the iPad there. But, we've gotten so accustomed to the electronics, and you know, we talk about that and think about everything that has electronics in it, you know. I mean, I'm sitting here in my office. My printer wouldn't be able to – I wouldn't be able to print out contracts. My phones wouldn't work. My iPad wouldn't work. I wouldn't be able to do this radio show. We wouldn't be able to, send out emails. We can't drive the cars. We can't pump gas because the pumps are all it's all electrical now. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on down the chain. So yeah, it could be a huge disruption.
Right. Well, speaking of disruptions, I want to go ahead before we jump on Mad Mike. I don't know if you saw my message. You know, we talked earlier about being able to tease why we are doing the July show. And I just got a text message, you know, from the people we're working with and said, go ahead and tease it a little bit and mention it. So something, Colorado Ron, I'm gonna let you do it. I actually got to tease you for the first time today, and I'm feeling a little bad. So I'll let you be the one that breaks the news. I'll go ahead.
Well, we're pretty excited about this. We got a call, about a month ago or so, and we were asked to put on an event in Dallas, Texas. And at first, I said, well, we've already done an event. We just left Dallas. And what was exciting about this was the fact that it was, people that worked with Glenn Beck, and Glenn Beck is doing an event in Dallas called Restoring Love.
At
the Cowboy Stadium. And the event, Restoring Love, is huge. I mean, they've already pre-sold, 75,000, 100,000 tickets, something like that. It's a huge event. And one of the things that they were wanting was some sort of expo or preparedness-type expo. And so they have actually came and shopped our event that we had in Dallas. They liked it, and they wanted us to duplicate that at the Glenn Beck event. And so we got really excited, and we jumped on that opportunity. And so now, in July, we are going to be at the Restoring Love, Glenn Beck's Restoring Love event at the Cowboy Stadium, doing a self-reliance expo. So we are excited about that.
Right. So let me make sure I make sure we're clear on this. We are not at the Cowboy Stadium. Glenn Beck's show. Restoring Love will be happening at the Cowboys Stadium there in Arlington, Texas. And across the street at the Sheraton Hotel, they'll be doing their check-in and everything else. And we'll have our our check-in over there also, where you can purchase your tickets for the expo. And then across the street is the convention center. And like Colorado Ron said, is they're looking for activities. It's a 3-day show. They're doing three different speeches and having speakers and everything else up there as part of it. And they wanted to make sure that they were staying true, I think, to their nature and kind of finding activities for people to do as part of it. And so we now have the space across the street, the convention center space across the street, and it'll be promoted with the Glenn Beck stuff, and you know, people can come across the street and participate and actually look at all the products, you know, when they're not at the Cowboy Stadium doing listening to Glenn Beck, you know, talk about all the wonderful things he talks about. So, I mean, I can't imagine feeling, I mean, we feel so honored to even be considered to be associated with that group.
Absolutely. I mean, I was so ecstatic when we got the call.
And we're flying out on Monday to go meet with some people at Mercury One. And we're, so Colorado Ron and I will be in Dallas on Monday and go walk the venue and everything else. And more information will follow. We're not 100% sure exactly everything it entails, and as we get more information, we will let it out there. But
what do we wear? Going to Mercury One,
you know,
do we wear our normal clothes? Are we supposed to dress up a little bit? What are we supposed to do?
You know, I love watching. I'm actually a fan of GBTV, and you know, my wife is a dedicated Glenn Beck listener to his radio show. And when he was on Fox, we watched it early. And he seems like a pretty laid-back guy. And first of all, guys, I want to make sure it's clear. As far as we know, we won't even get a chance to shake the hand. We won't meet Glenn Beck at this meeting over here. We're just going over there. Boy, but if we did, believe me, you'll have the pictures all over Facebook before the handshake's over. But, you know, and I got to, you know, when we went to Jerusalem, that was kind of the whole thing. It was like, ooh, Glenn Beck, Glenn Beck. I think we just dress normal. I think he seems like just a very, you know, everyday sort of guy. And it's not like either one of us dress like slobs when we go someplace. So,
true. I just didn't know, should I iron my shirt or should I just not worry about it?
Oh, come on. Even if you ironed it, by the time you got there, it would be completely, we just have to keep you away from the chocolate, chocolate gravy until we actually go over there and do the meeting, because that would be kind of embarrassing. Yeah, to go over there and have big chocolate gravy stains on both of our shirts before we go and meet with someone from Mercury One. That would be it's pretty funny. So anyway, we wanted to go ahead and share the news with you and let you know that that we are going to be doing this show. I mean, people thought it was odd when Colorado Ron postulated the Dallas event on our website, selfrelianceexpo.com.
Everybody was asking, you know, why are we doing another event back-to-back? Because we just left Dallas. We were there, what, in February?
That's right. And we were there in February.
Yeah, so we're like, why are you going back to Dallas? And so it was stressful because we put it on there, but we couldn't say why we were going back just yet. So I'm glad we were able to announce it today. That's awesome. You guys are listening live. You're the very first people outside of the board of directors to hear. So
right. That's
pretty exciting.
And like I said, and more information will come. It will be as every week when we do our meetings and we find out more information, we'll be populating it because, you know, I think this is a huge vindication of what our board of directors and Colorado Ron. Well, the reason we all kind of started doing this is, you know, getting selected makes us feel like the sessions we do at our shows for free, the radio stuff, everything that we do to be educational was acknowledged to some degree. And because there's other choices out there, we all know. And what I have to say to the rest of those people, neener, neener, neener. I'm sorry, I was just kidding. To the rest of you guys, if you guys want to participate, come on and have a conversation with us, and we'll try to get you out there because we're all going the same direction. And the neener, neener,
absolutely,
neener, the neener, neener, neener was not as heartfelt as it sounded. So, all right. Let's go ahead and get to who are we talking to? Oh, Mad Mike. All right, so we promised him last week that we'd give him another 10 minutes to go finish his list because, you know, there's so much information out there about it, and we'll let him know that, more solar flares. It looked like his predictions were right. So, hey, Mad Mike, you out there?
Yes, I am, guys. Good morning, Colorado, and good morning, Bubba D.
How you doing?
Oh, great, great. And thanks for having me on. And just a comment about Glenn Beck. Back at the Dallas Expo, I had a chance to meet and speak a couple times with Glenn's marketing guy, and he was ecstatic about what he, you know, what he saw. And so it was really good news to hear about what you're throwing together or with them, you know, coming up in Dallas again. And my only comment would be wear a sport coat down to that initial meeting because they were all in three-piece suits.
He was right. He's talking about Benjamin. Yeah, the marketing, one of his marketing people from the Blaze, Benjamin Pratt, comes to our events and checks things out, and they have a good relationship with him. And you're right. He, you know, the three guys that he came down with, they all had suits on, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah, but that's okay. And just as long as, I mean, you know, you can still wear your cowboy boots or, you know, your Levi's. But anyway, hey, I wanted to also thank you about the little bit of introduction about the CMEs. And just to give you an update, 2 weeks ago when we first got that glancing blow, I believe that was the same sunspot that's coming around again, which is 1429. And, you know, we talked, you know, as you just did in the, I'm going to call it the preamble to, you know, what the radiation topic, you were talking about disruption of power plants. Well, 2 weeks ago, that glancing blow CME, actually, I just heard it yesterday, and I looked it up, but I don't have enough of the details on on what actually happened to the substations. But in this country, 290 substations had failures, equipment failures, based on that CME that hit us 2 weeks ago. And it was a glancing blow. And the interesting thing is, as you were just saying about the tornado, I think you said five times the size of Earth, sunspot 1429 is coming, or it's, you know, it's moving around. It's it'll be facing towards us next week. I have a solar telescope that I actually, whenever it's clear or, you know, at least daily, I look at the sun. Hopefully at sunrise, that's the best time that I like to catch it. But I can see those flares. Hopefully I'm going to catch it, an actual CME flare being ejected. But you can see the active plumes and the tornado stuff in the telescope. So I'm thinking about bringing that to the expos just so people in your audience and hopefully you and some of your kids can actually look through a telescope and see in real time.
Oh, yeah.
So that'll be actually kind of interesting.
Now, that's cool. That's cool. So you can actually see the sun through there. Obviously, it's like blinding you then. And then what kind of power is that? I mean, you know, what kind of zoom do you have on that puppy?
Well, I got two different lenses, and because the telescope has, I think it's got seven different filters in it, depending on how you're looking and what you're looking for, it allows you to see different definitions, either, you know, based on in the corona, or you can dial in and actually start looking at into the actual surface of the sun, and so you can see the sunspots or actually all the churning. It looks like magnetic churning. So it's really a real fun tool. And just to give you the audience an idea, I had it out last summer, and a gal happened to be looking in, and she actually saw an explosion out of a sunspot, and it was going off to the side. It wasn't coming towards us, but she actually got to visually see that in real time. Now, you can go on the SOHO, you know, satellite websites, and you can see and download all the, you know, their movie clips that are usually sped up because it's all time, you know, time lapse. But just to be able to see it in real time, it's awesome, and the kids love it. And so I think I will bring that to the expos and let my guys sell the Fallout X, and I'll be outside a lot just with my telescope.
Sweet. Sweet. I definitely want to check that out.
Hey, I had a quick comment. I'm hoping that you guys, you know, we can get through. I want to specifically talk about two, I'm going to put it in quotes, solutions to radioactive fallout. But we ended the last week's segment with the Mississippi River and we were talking about is Baba D was saying about, you know, in order to keep a reactor cool in a problem situation or in a, you know, try to keep it from melting down, the last line of defense would be just to dump water, and we were talking about polluting the Mississippi River. Well, that, you know, sent me down another rabbit trail because, again, we're all preparing in our own ways, and radiation is something that I prepared for in the best way that I knew how. And so I had to go back into researching, okay, well, what is the size of the Mississippi River versus the Pacific Ocean? Now, I know the Mississippi dumps into the Gulf, but right now there are many, many scientists in the world that are worried about the death of the Pacific Ocean from the six power plants in Fukushima. Now, it's not dead yet, but they're saying long-term effects as you could say, if the Pacific dies, that's a pretty grave situation. So I started looking at, okay, well, if you start dumping the same water into the Mississippi, what would that effect be? Because I think Bubba had said, you know, all those millions of gallons going down and, you know, just a little bit of water, you know, hundreds of gallons or thousands of gallons, it'll surely mix. Well, just to give you an idea, after a lot of research that really leads you down dead ends, I did want to say that if scientists are worried about the Pacific Ocean, and this is ongoing now for a year, and we're talking about the Mississippi, so, you know, close to us in our own neighborhood, it turns out the Mississippi is, and I got to look where I wrote that down, it is 10 billion times smaller than the Pacific Ocean. It's 10, yeah, I mean, it's so much, or the Pacific is so much larger. So what I'm trying to get at, if six power plants have certain scientists who are talking, worried about the death of Pacific, something that is 10 billion times smaller, one power plant, I would still worry a little bit. I mean, I know it's a lot of water, but anyway, I just wanted to throw out that you know, that little perspective that it is, it's not a small issue. It's not something that we can do much about, except, you know, what we talked about and what people will learn in the future. But it is definitely something that is on a scale, it's a little larger than what humankind still can deal with when there is a problem.
All right, so when we ended last week, you were kind of starting the list. You started with water, what they could do with water, and we have about 15 minutes to kind of try to get through this. So
okay.
Can you kind of go through the rest of your list on things people can do to prepare for...
Yeah. Yeah, that's and what I wanted to do last week, and when I started, I wanted to just basically lay out the guideline that we're in a new era where there's fallout not only in the air, in the rain, which means it's coming into our drinking water, groundwater, all the water sources, but it's also into the soil. And so when you look at, okay, the initial let's say contamination would be by breathing or drinking or eating. And when you look at solutions, you got to say, okay, how can I minimize what's coming inside of my body through those, you know, pathways, you know, air you know, digestion. Now, everybody can go on the internet and they can do all their searching and you will find basically the same solutions repeated over and over and over. And I had mentioned, you know, a couple things last week about what's out there, let's say, to purify water. And really, there's, except for I have a nuclear filter that I bought from a retired a nuclear power plant contract. And that filter to filter out radionuclides in the air, it's I believe it's a 30-inch by 30-inch, you know, opening. But the filter is 18 inches deep, and it has a pre-filter on it that's 4 inches deep. So you have 22 inches of filter material that you know, fits in a 30 by 30 window. So what I'm trying to get at there is that that's not practical. I mean, I haven't installed that anywhere. I'm saving that for, you know, the worst case nightmare, let's say. But what I think I'm getting at is that people on the shelf today, there are very few options. We are going to create them. Now, the most important thing that I wanted to get out, because we only have into the 10 minutes, is the two things I know best about. And first, I'm going to lay out a disclaimer again. I'm not a doctor. This is for information only. I have done the research, and this is what I do for myself and for my family. The docs and I have created Fallout X based on this information, which is our radiation product that anybody can find on falloutx.net. But the two items that I know most about are kelp and pectin. And the pectin is the first that I'd like to, you know, mention to everybody. And specifically, it put a smile on my face this morning when you had the Appleseed folks on, because, you know, the pectin that was found in Chernobyl to me to be most effective in pulling out cesium. And the three isotopes that we worry about most right now are radioactive iodine, radioactive cesium, and radioactive strontium. Now, the cesium, it turned out that the Army back with the Eskimos in the 60s were using just pectin, and I imagine it was citrus pectin or, you know, some form of pectin with the Eskimos.
What is pectin?
Pectin is just, it's actually the... everybody knows yet, or everybody has heard that to make jam, or what makes jellies and jam gel, is for the most part, it used to be either an apple or a citrus pectin, and that in an apple it is actually a long chain polygalacturonic acid that is that's found inside the skin of the apples or, you know, the citrus fruit. And it has been used, you know, again, in food preparation for, you know, for decades or, I imagine centuries. It turned out that between the 20 years of the Army giving the Eskimos pectin and Chernobyl, I might not say this correctly because it's a Russian name, but Dr. Bandevhesky, he looked at all the, you know, various solutions around to help the children in Chernobyl after the Chernobyl incident, and he looked at the spirulinas and pigments, which would be like Prussian blue, which is a drug that's out there that unfortunately males go sterile with when they use it. But he actually tested all these different potential solutions, and he found that the apple pectin, and actually a specific form of apple pectin, which is a low methoxyl, actually really worked well with the children in the Ukraine. And it worked so well that within the next year they had 50,000 kids taking it was called Vitapec, but it was just a product that was pectin-based. And after the 50,000, I mean, I've seen studies where it's well over 120,000 down the road. And so here was something, when I started researching radionuclides and this potential problem, and I have to say, because of being in Alaska, the pectin was already introduced to me earlier, but in the research, I have found, because of Chernobyl, the only clinical studies and doctor-supported information were a specific, a couple different forms of kelp and pectin. Anything else that anybody, any other solution that you'll read on the Internet today basically has not been field-tested with an actual nuclear event. There are, I imagine, handfuls of drugs out there because radiation and, you know, thyroid problems and the medical industry, you know, they have lots of different tools that they might use. But they're basically, and that's where we ought to be talking and bringing on Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, or, you know, an MD to actually discuss this a little more. But the drugs that are out there, and there are, I think today, there are 6 or 7 that are approved, and there's a number of them in trials for radiation poisoning or radiation contamination, radionuclide contamination, you know, particle contamination. But they're all been, they all have been designed for acute radiation. So, and because of that, they're most likely expensive. And they won't be available to everybody because, you know, drugs aren't, they're not made for the whole population. So the idea about the pectin, it's something that, you know, when I'm hearing the Appleseed segment, I've always thought when I, you know, for the past year or two, that we should be planting apple trees everywhere in this country. Because if we have fallout today, which, you know, it's hard to prove to people, I'll make a couple statements if I get a chance later. But the idea is that if the apple pectin will pull out the cesium before it can accumulate in, let's say, my body, I'm not even going to use my son's body, which is more important to me, unfortunately, than mine, but I'm a father. But if you are able to, as that radioactive cesium is coming into your body through either, it's mostly going to be in your food and in your water, and mostly really in your food now. If you can each day pull out a portion of that, it's not going to accumulate. Now, to give you an idea, a study just got released this week about the seaweed, the kelp off of Southern California. And unfortunately, they are talking about the concentrations of radioactive iodine in all the seaweed off in the waters off the beaches. And that seaweed washes up on the beaches, too. I mean, it's in masses. Now, they just came out saying that there are 2,500 becquerels per kilogram in the kelp, and it's based on last year. They did the study, and it was almost, you know, 11 months old. It was hidden from us. Now, 2,500 becquerels of iodine in the kelp here means that you got approximately 2 billion radioactive iodine little particles in that kilogram of kelp. Now, and that's just to give you an idea, when they say becquerels, they're just talking about the one ion that just went flash, not all the other ones that are sitting there waiting to go into chaos. And so when I heard this about the kelp, I'm thinking, okay, there's more information that backed up, you know, my feelings that, yes, we did get a lot of fallout here on the West Coast and in the United States. But what they never tell us, Bubba, in Colorado, they never tell us that the radioactive iodine, the 2 billion particles in a kilogram of kelp, that decays away. It has a half-life of 8 days. So in 100 days, it's gone to, you know, basically nothing. But along with that iodine is also the cesium and the strontium and the uranium, and that, and the kelp has the affinity to pull in strontium too and cesium very, very well, and that's what we'll talk about next. But so here this kelp in Southern California last year has not only 2 billion ions of radioactive iodine, which everybody knows about because of iodine, it also has 1/3 the amount of cesium in becquerels and whatever, and that's just a guess because I don't have that data, but usually when you see the iodine, you can assume that 10 to 50% less is cesium, and then it even goes down a lot less for the strontium. But the cesium and the strontium with those 30-year half-lives, that's where we hear of all this bone cancer, heart attacks, and all these problems. It's the iodine, short-term thyroid, and the cesium and strontium, long-term. Now, the kelp with the other this is the other solution that I'd like to discuss in a little more detail, because you know, kelp is readily available.
Hold on. I just want to make sure we're down to 2 minutes on this. We kind of went down the rabbit hole again. So can go ahead and try to make that point and everything else, and we'll have to kind of pick it up again.
Okay, sounds good. Again, when all these solutions, the miso soups, the brassica vegetables, you know, changing our diet, all that is trying to minimize what's coming in our body. What the two solutions that I'm talking about are low methoxyl pectin and a specific kelp that I have in our product, which is the Laminaria japonica kelp, which was used by Dr. Durakovich in Chernobyl, and he was able to pull out 90% of the strontium in his children in the study that he did, or multiple studies. So, you know, just to boil it down, as far as my information, as far as proven clinical doctor study, non-pharmaceutical acute drugs so that you can minimize the accumulation of these things over time, are two really simple things. Apple pectin. Any pectin will work. Apple pectin, and especially the low methoxyl pectin, it will work 10, 100 times better because it's actually been designed. But apple pectin and kelp will really work. The only problem with this is the longer we wait, the more the apple trees and the kelp, as I said, in California, we have contaminated kelp, the ingredients that you might want to eat, which is, you know, these pectins, they are slowly getting contaminated, the apple trees and, you know, the kelp beds. And so this is something that we should learn now, and we should kind of get a little more proactive now, or, like I said last week, we start growing everything in greenhouses now, and I have an idea that, or I have a feeling that there'll be a lot of apple trees being grown under covers, and we'll, you know, we can talk in the future about the soil and how to, you know, sequester some of this stuff so it doesn't make it up into the trees, but and that's really the bottom line, and that's the whole reason why Fallout X was created, because in the research, there were very, very little solutions that had clinical studies that could back up the results. Everything else is just hearsay. And I'm not saying it doesn't work. It's just that, you know, I looked for, you know, the best solutions at that time, which was last year, to solve this problem.
Okay. Well, I think... Oops, sorry about that, guys. Phone just started going off. We need to go ahead and follow up on this to go ahead and cover other things. Okay, for some reason it won't stop.
What is up with this? You talk about this fancy room that you built, and you can't turn the phone off?
Well, here's the whole thing is I just realized that it's a portable phone, so I need a solar flare to come and knock it out. Yeah, so that I won't have that problem anymore. Anyway, Mike, what we'll try to do is we'll bring you back because I think maybe what we need to do is break this into topics. We covered water. Now we covered, you know, the kelp and taking care and going things like with Radiation X. And then we should talk about air, you know, the next time so we can make sure we can hit each topic and get enough time to talk about each one. Does that work for you?
Yeah, that sounds good. You just let me know. And just for your audience, real quick, this is something that we just have to learn how to deal with. It's not the end. It's not the end yet. But it's something that with Fallout X and other products, we can deal with it the best we can anyway. And the idea is let's learn today. Let's not wait and then have to talk to Dr. Bones and try to get one of these pharmaceutical drugs that, you know, when you have an acute problem. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, man, Mike. All right, guys, let's go ahead and go to a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show and talk about what's going on.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now. 866-762-9238. 866-762-9238 or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com. Enerfood.com.
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com. Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to Backwood Homes Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubba Da Vinci. Along with me is Colorado Ron. We're going to wrap this thing up. You know something? I love having Mad Mike on here. This guy is a fountain of information. What we've got to do is we've got to find a way to keep him from running down the rabbit hole, because every time he gets on, he's got so many different things he wants to talk about. We go down like 20 different aisles. So
we should break it down into subject matters, because he has such a wealth of information. If we can categorize it and get that stuff out of him, I think that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because I think the information is good. I mean, and I think every time we look at things, we see people popping up on our Facebook and everything else saying, this is great information, I didn't get all of this. And I think it's because there's so much to go over, we bounce around, that we don't get it done. So we're going to keep working with Mad Mike. Pretty soon he's going to have his own show because he's got so much information. But until then, we'll keep working with him. All right,
yeah,
guys.
You can find him at falloutx.net.
Right. Yes, yeah. Check out his product, www.falloutx.net. It was a great show. We have a special this week from our friends at Backwoods Home Magazine. They are doing a guide to raising meat goats. They're doing $5 off of that, so I'm going to populate that both on our Facebook and right there for y'all. Now it's up on our thing, so you can check that out and go to their website. The website for Backwoods Home is www.backwoodspluralhome.com. You can find us at selfrelianceexpo.com. We want to thank Jim Heath from Appleseed. You can get his information at www.appleseedinfo.org. We want to thank Patrice Lewis. You can find her at rural-revolution.com, and she will be a speaker at our event, and Jim will be setting up the Appleseed booth there. So that's all good stuff. Next week, exciting. We have who's your favorite guy? Colorado? We lost him again. But anyway, we have Masad Ayoub will be on next week. Colorado Ron is setting up a whole bunch of questions for him. He's always excited to talk to him. And we will also be talking to Nurse Amy. Nurse Amy from Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Doom and Gloom. Nope, that's wrong. It's Doom and Bloom, folks. Come on, you knew that. Doom and Bloom. She will be on next week. She's another one of our panel members. And we'll be talking to her. And next week for my first show, there you are.
Good grief. This is ridiculous.
Solar flares.
I'm blaming it on the solar flare. It may not even be here yet, but I'm going to blame it on that.
That's right. And then next week on Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Bubba's Bookshelf, and I will be honored to have Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy. They'll be my first guests on the show talking about their new medical book. I've read it cover to cover. It is awesome information. It is going down, going down in my medical kit, because there is no better medical book out there for you people who want to be self-reliant. And I think we'll be able to go ahead and figure out how they went and did it. Some inside information that I'll cover next week. Dr. Bones did all the illustrations inside it. That's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive.
He drew all of them?
That's what I was told. Nurse Amy did some of the photographs. I'm not sure if it was all the photographs. And Dr. Bones did the drawings inside there.
Wow.
I mean, talking about self-reliant, you publish your own book, you put out your information, and you do your drawings. Do your own
drawings. Jeez, that's pretty good.
Well, it looks like I was just corrected from the gray void. He didn't do all of them. Well, he did enough of them that I was impressed. And so he did the drawings. She did some of the pics. I love having the gray void out here where we can pop up and you can actually read when they make comments. So I have Nurse Amy correcting me right now. So, all right, guys. You can find us on Facebook, Backwoods Home Magazine. If you look that up in your search engine, you can find Backwoods Home. Look up Preparedness Radio, Self-Reliance Expo, and Bubba Da Vinci, two words. Any of those we appreciate the likes, because that's the way we get out our information. Colorado Ron, do you actually have a Colorado Ron Facebook page? You don't, do you?
No, I don't, actually.
You need to get one up if you're gonna start pimping your book pretty soon. Of course, I gotta talk to your publicist before I get on there. All right, guys. Next week we should have some updates also on what's going on with the Glenn Beck Show and what's going on with our events. So I think that's it. I think that's a wrap.
Awesome.
Do you have anything else?
I don't. I guess we'll see everybody next week.
All right. We want to thank Humless, Inner Health, and Sun Oven for sponsoring the show. They are great people. Check out their website, www.hemless.com. For Inner Foods, you can go to www.innerfood.com, and Sun Oven is www.sunoven.com. We'll talk to you next week. Have a blessed week.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com. And Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator.
The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook. You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.